DeMarco Show, the best wrestling program on the planet. On the planet.
The opportunity for this certain nameless person to come into my company out of the goodness of my heart. I did not need him. I didn't need him. I don't need anybody to come in here and tell me how to run my own wrestling company. I mean, good Lord. I mean, I don't need any Vince. I don't need any has-been Eric Bischoff. I don't need any Mr. Stephanie Levesque. And I don't need those good old boys, Jarrett. How can they tell me to do anything better when I am the best the industry's ever seen? Let's talk AJ Styles for a second. Good Lord, I certainly do not need him. I mean, last week, I asked him so sweet. I said, can you just leave my building, please? And you know what he did? He snuck back in, jumped the security railing, and inserted himself in a match that he had absolutely nothing to do with.
Greg DeMarco Show.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is, huh?
There's a lot of things I like, and I like the Greg DeMarco Show.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Really?
This is Leigh Ann Marie, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
We all love Greg DeMarco.
Really?
I like Greg DeMarco.
Sometimes, at night, we spoon.
Anybody got time for that?
No, Greg. No, Greg. I'm serious. I love you.
Don't do it like that, baby.
Patrick, is someone tuckered out? Oh, sneaky. You gotta go to bed, huh?
And I love you, Greg.
Damn!
We all love Greg DeMarco.
That I love Patrick O'Dowd.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Oh, you guys are so adorable.
That's going to be a soundbite right there.
Uh-oh. You're welcome.
And I love you, Greg.
You're listening to the Perfect 10, Scarlett Bordeaux, and that's not, they come off really weird. Oh my God, see, this is what happens when you're trying too hard. That's what happens. That's, I just gotta, third time's a charm. This is the Perfect 10, Scarlett Bordeaux, and you're listening to the Greg DeMarco Show, the only show, the best show on the web.
Up, everybody. It is Bound for Glory Sunday, TNA's biggest show of the year, and we are live here on the Greg DeMarco Show with Greg DeMarco, Patrick O'Dowd, Heather Lynn, and Sue Young. Right now, it is just Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd. Patrick O'Dowd, everything's working. Behind the scenes, it was last-second mania here at the program.
Well, way to scramble and cobble it together, man.
And that's what we got to do sometimes. Yeah, well, you know, Windows decided to update today and reinstall the wrong version of Skype. So that was, of course,
you
I don't
know,
use Skype
you
except
say
for
no to that thing, right?
No, it didn't give me the option.
Oh, see, mine was like, do you want to do it now? Or, and I was like, no.
No, it was Windows, like entire Windows, like literally.
No, oh, no, I get you.
Like all, I went to Windows 8.1 and that jacked up everything. And of course, yeah, I did it like last night, but I didn't notice. So yeah, it was good stuff.
Amateur hour.
So, super, super duper excited about that, let me tell you. So yeah. Heather went out, she's sick. It's okay though, because she doesn't follow TNA. So
yeah, that's
really,
true.
Really,
I was a little concerned as to what she would bring to the conversation.
Yeah, she'd been like, you know, complaining, and which is fine. No reason to not complain. But she would not have seen nor understood the product at all to talk about it. Sue Young is scheduled to join us later tonight. She's currently in Austin, Texas. She wrestled for Anarchy Championship Wrestling, so she'll be joining us a little bit later. We'll be texting back and forth as she is traveling, which can always be fun. But we're not alone as we talk about Bound for Glory. Is last week, Steve Cook was gracious enough to join us for our Bound for Glory preview. And this week, Steve Cook is back for a little Bound for Glory reaction. Steve Cook!
Hey, Greg. Hey, Patrick. Like I was saying, it's, you know, Bound for Glory, the World Series of Professional Wrestling right here. That's right.
Yes. Yes, yeah. The maybe
like the World Baseball Classic. You know, it happens, but not a lot of
people
really see it.
The World Baseball Classic, maybe similar ratings, rating-wise, I don't know. But, yeah, very good times, folks. Bound for Glory tonight from beautiful San Diego, California, also known as Whale's Vagina. Yes. An ECW hotbed, as I learned during the main event with the ECW.
You have a vagina!
Hey, there we go.
It was never an ECW hotbed. That they went to LA once.
I remember that. That is the show where the XPW guys were at ringside, and then like somebody shoved Francine or something, and the whole fracas happened. I remember that.
Yeah, that was the cross promotional war that everyone remembers, of course. So
Yeah.
We could dedicate an entire program to that amazing.
You can do that one on your own, man.
I could. That's the thing. It speaks for itself. I really could.
We could probably find
I really
XPW
could
people.
Do that
I'm
one
sure
on my own. Bound for Glory is in the record book.
Yes, it is. Bound for Glory.
If they have internet access. We have to make sure they have internet. They have to have internet access. So we'll see. But yeah, Bound for Glory is in the books. As expected, AJ Styles did defeat Bully Ray, and you know, many people did say it would be an overbooked main event, and seems like they were correct. Overall impressions first, and then of course we'll talk about the importance. Now, Patrick O'Dowd, give us your overall impression of the 2013 effort for Bound for Glory.
I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It didn't, you know, there were a lot of reactions of people really running down the pay-per-view that, like, I don't know that were completely fair. It's supposed to have a big-time feel to it, and that, because as we've talked about, it's like they're supposed to be like their culminating show. It didn't feel very big-time. There were a lot of matches that you could have seen on Impact and weren't really made to feel special. I dozed a little during Magnus and Sting. Not like really dozed, but like it was a slow match that I could have seen anywhere. And that was sort of the overall feel. I feel like they did a lot of instances where I feel like the right guy won, even if I didn't predict it. Although I will say I was thoroughly disappointed in the end of the Angle and Bobby Roode match as well. But, it was kind of a meh pay-per-view for me, other than the main, which, despite being, I mean, it was overbooked, but AJ killed himself today.
Almost actually did kill himself.
Yeah,
like,
AJ,
yeah.
AJ
he was
really
within inches of hitting his head on that
dangerous
chair.
Dangerous spots. There were from the belly flop on the table to the chair, he took some serious punishment.
That wasn't a belly flop. That was a 450.
But his land was full-on face down on the table. Like,
oh yeah, and less than 6 inches away from hitting his head on that chair too.
Exactly.
Scary.
Indeed. I mean, if the guy's going out at TNA, he's going out in style. You got to give that to him. He didn't half-ass or nothing. He went balls to the wall.
Let's hope he's not going out since he's the new world champion.
Well, hey, you never know, folks. I was waiting at the end of the show. I was wondering, will Dixie hold the title in abeyance now, or will she wait till Thursday? I don't think
they go that route. I don't think they go the abeyance route. I think it's going to be more Dixie versus AJ as sort of your top of the card feud.
And the main event, like I said, AJ put on a show, and Bully Ray was fantastic as well. You know, your typical running stuff. The whole unfurling of the mat and all that. And I guess the one thing that kind of bothered me and kind of took me out of it was the whole thing where Dixie comes down and she gives Bully Ray the chair or whatever. And they get to the part where AJ's pinning Bully Ray like right in front of her. And then Dixie tells Earl Hebner to stop counting. Now, at that point, AJ's got to figure he's not going to get the three count, right? Because Dixie's just going to keep the guy from counting. But apparently she won't because the guy did eventually count the three pinfall there. So why did Earl eventually count when he wasn't before?
That's a good question, Steve.
I think it's – you want to talk about somebody having a credibility issue coming out of that event, like right there. Like, she didn't fire you unless she's going to fire Earl on Thursday.
Oh, I'm sure Earl gets fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would
Earl's
imagine.
Earl's been fired more than Jim Ross, for God's sakes.
More in real life than Jim Ross. Like Earl's been legitimately fired plenty. So, yeah, it's painful only in the sense that the Earl Hebner thing, once she told him not to count, you're right. Like, that opened this weird door that they're going to either have to explain or ignore. And we'll see what they choose to do on Thursday. I don't think we're in for the autumn of AJ, because AJ didn't say he was going to win the title and leave. But he did say he was going to win the title and make Dixie pay. So now are we in for a contract negotiation angle? Are we in for Dixie's now, remember Dixie put out 50 grand for AJ, for someone to take AJ out. Is she now going to put out 50 grand to AJ just to wrestle in hopes that someone would beat AJ for the title? It's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Well, 50 grand, that'd be kind of crazy. I don't see a lot of the people on the roster. You got to figure they'd be jumping for that kind of money, right? Shit.
You would think. By the way, as an aside, why is TNA bringing in a new announcer at Bound for Glory after getting rid of all
Well, Gilbert Corsi, I know Gilbert Corsi a little bit. He's from the Louisville area. He was on a local Louisville TV station for a long time. And he's been on the OVW for a while now, and I guess they just brought him in right from Louisville. I didn't hear anything about him being under contract or anything, but that's where he came from.
If he's been at OVW, it was probably the RVD special, the one-night deal. Could you not have anybody else that could work a backstage interview? It just got reported, but Veda Scott was in the building. She can do a backstage interview. So, breaking news. Breaking news, Veda Scott had a tryout match for Bound for Glory. Breaking news, thanks to PW Insider. Yeah, her and Candice LeRae had a tryout match before Bound for Glory. That's why Veda Scott wasn't at Shimmer today. I guess they flew her out.
I heard she was at Shimmer on Saturday. I think that was the first day, right? So I saw her there. So that's
as was Sue Young, only on Saturday at Shimmer. So Saturday was the day to go to Shimmer. Not that Sunday was bad, but Saturday was the day. So where's Aces and Eights now? Nuck Garrett did promise that when Bully Ray needed somebody, he was in for a surprise, and I don't think they did anything surprising.
No, not really. Nuck did get an offensive move. I was kind of surprised by that.
And then Taz claimed it wasn't a good enough move.
Yeah. Well,
which I thought that was hysterical, by the way. Like, he was like, he needed to do a higher impact maneuver than the choke slam.
I know.
Right. He needed to do a jackknife powerbomb or something. That would have done it. Yeah.
I'm actually, I'll be honest with you, the one thing that I'm glad about with the main event is when Ray busted out the blade, cut up the ring again. This is the third time we've seen this from Bully Ray. Like, that, I'm kind of bored with that. And to be honest with you, like, Bully Ray, last year's Bound for Glory main event was amazing. It was Austin Aries and Jeff Hardy, and they went nuts. And it was high pick, balls to the wall action. And this one was just kind of slow, and it was a Bully Ray match. And I guess I'm just, I think the Bully Ray world title run kind of wore out for me, as I was realizing as I'm watching the main event tonight. I'm sitting there thinking, man, I hope he loses solely from the wrestling aspect of things. Not that I dislike Bully Ray, but I just got tired of that match.
Patrick, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, he has held that belt for how long now, and discounting the Chris Sabin interruption, like, it was time, it was going to happen, it was inevitable. So I think that from that end of it, I think everybody was going to get their wish. I think Aces and Eights is pretty close to done and played. It's gonna go the way of the dodo.
Oh, they got
I
me.
Hope. Like, I really hope. Because yeah, I think that they've really played it out. Like those guys, I think that the story that comes out of that is that Bully was abandoned at the end, you know, by his guys, and maybe they'll play that out.
Unless you have like a new Nexus, like influx of new talent to Aces and Eights, they gotta be done.
Well, I had a very scary thought moment when he was like come out that suddenly like everybody who had supposedly been fired was gonna just come running out to the back and destroy AJ, and that was gonna be the end of Bound for Glory.
Which is something you texted to me like earlier in the week.
I know, and then when he started waving it, I got really scared. Like I really did. I was like, no, please don't, no.
Well,
you know who
Dixie
I wanted to interfere?
Right?
Yeah, Dixie came down, and that.
Well,
I wanted Claire
Lynch.
I wanted Claire Lynch to come out. That's what I wanted.
Boy.
I suggested it. No, just remember that baby was fake. I just wanted Claire Lynch to come out, and either interfere on AJ's behalf. That's what I would have loved to have seen. Claire Lynch comes out, and it's like the real true love is revealed, and she interferes on behalf of AJ, and next thing you know. But it'll be like, you know, when TV shows change the actors around, it'll be somebody completely different playing Claire Lynch, but everybody pretends like it hasn't changed to someone completely, like it's some female indie wrestler.
I could actually get behind that. I could actually support that.
It'd be creative anyway.
Sure, I mean, and we're used to shows changing characters and whatnot. I was just kind of wondering, when is Claire Lynch going to be on the Greg DeMarco show is what I was curious about, since, you know, I think every woman that's a woman in this business has been on Greg DeMarco show. So when's Claire Lynch coming on?
Yeah, no kidding.
I have a feeling if I had a way of contacting Claire Lynch, she would never reply.
No. She wanted to be disassociated from the wrestling business, the last I heard. I suppose.
Let's say for TNA that in our Bound for Glory reaction show, we're talking about Claire Lynch.
It does not say good things, Greg.
So main event over, AJ Styles, thankfully not dead, given what he did. And now we move forward with AJ Styles in the main event. Normal TNA booking would dictate that we need to have the Bully Ray rematch, they do it on Thursday, which would be something that Dixie would want to do, or if they're going to drag that thing out to Genesis, which I really hope not. We'll see. What do you think is next? How soon do we see the Bully Ray rematch?
Is Genesis their next special Impact special edition thing?
Genesis is a pay-per-view in January, if they still do it. We'll see. It's weird because TNA had 3 pay-per-views from January to June and then nothing until the only one for the rest of the year. So the calendar's kind of... You think the WWE calendar is weird. Look at the TNA pay-per-view calendar. It's weirder.
Maybe they'll do it when they go back to the Impact Zone here in a few weeks.
Yeah, rumors have it that we're going back to Orlando, which won't be the same Impact Zone because isn't somebody in that building now?
It's like a haunted house or something right now. Like it's some goofy attraction that is seasonal.
Okay, so maybe we'll have it after that. You know what? Whatever.
Yeah.
They go back to the zone. If it keeps the company alive, then I'm fine with it.
Whatever.
It's comforting.
Yeah. It is.
Comforting
it is
bosom, the Impact Zone.
Yes, the comforting bosom, indeed. There's nothing better than a comforting bosom. That's
no, there's
for sure.
Not.
So the main event overbooked. Anything to add to the main event for you guys? Anything that just really stood out outside of AJ nearly dying? Are you satisfied with the ending outside of the obvious Earl Hebner issues that may or may not be explained? Anything for the good of the people before we check out some of the other matches at Bound for Glory?
Yeah, it was fine with me. Other than the whole Earl Hebner thing, I thought it was a perfectly fine TNA main event. And they actually did the right ending, because like I said, I was waiting at the end of that show for Dixie Carter, like, you know, take away the title or something. So they're at least going to hold it up for a little while. Happy ending, send the people home with smiles on their faces. It was fine with me.
And you saw what I said to the people at home. I can't stand the people who are tweeting out pictures of how empty the arena is, photographing the hard camera side. Like, we know the hard camera side. The hard camera side was empty for SmackDown when they taped it last week. Like, yeah. You know, come on now. I understand. Look, I was at Bound for Glory last year, and the hard camera side was actually pretty full. So, yes, the attendance has gone down, but don't try to play it off like the arena is empty. Like I really hope nobody's falling for that one.
Well, but it's, I mean, we've seen this. We see this every time Impact tapes anywhere. Like, the only place where they didn't really were able to do that was when they did Slammiversary in Boston, because we saw that arena.
And that was empty on that site, too.
Yeah,
it was fully empty on that side as well.
It was, yeah, and it wasn't anything, like, it was cordoned off or whatever, but it wasn't that horrible.
Right.
So, right. You know, TNA isn't enough trouble, fans, without you trying to make it look worse. It's okay.
They can handle themselves.
Where are the pictures of lockdown that drew 8,000 people? I want to see those pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, granted, it drew 8,000 people in a facility that holds 45,000, but still, it drew 8,000 people, and everyone seems to want to forget that. So you know, whatever. What can we do? You brought up the Bobby Roode versus Kurt Angle match. I was also disappointed by the ending, and I would have just rather both guys stay down. And go with the double knockout at that point. If that's the direction you're going to go, I would just rather do that, because that didn't do anything for Bobby Roode.
No.
I mean, that was just as bad as the first time they wrestled at Bound for Glory 2 years ago.
Yeah, there was so much. Yeah, it was a very solid match that just got, I felt, ruined horribly and completely by a finish that didn't really do anything for Bobby, and you know, really, it turned the match again into being about, and maybe this is the point the whole time, but it turned into being about Kurt and his age and what can he handle, really, in my head, because the dude, he had him in an ankle lock, then he goes for an angle slam off the top, which he's done God knows how many times, and that's
Billion.
Enough to put him out. Yeah, like, that puts him out. Like,
yeah.
It's horrible. And I tweeted about it. I think, Cook, you tweeted me back, and we're like, it's like when Sting knocked himself out with a chair.
Oh, yeah.
Like, give me a break. Like,
yeah.
How?
Also,
why
against
was
Bobby Roode.
Story? Yes, why did that need to happen? Like, why?
Because it's Bobby Roode, and Bobby Roode's not allowed to do anything good.
He's not the guy, brother.
Remember, predicted the lockdown finish for James Storm. You know, I remember Bound for Glory. That was the
Bound.
Bobby Roode is the most, despite, you know, let's remember that he is the longest reigning TNA World Heavyweight Champion in history. He's been one of the weakest booked wrestlers in the entire company.
Oh,
and
God, yeah.
Still over, to his credit. Like, that's the thing. Like, he's like the cat with nine lives of bad TNA booking. But yet they're just going to keep on doing what they do with poor Bobby Roode. I would love to see them use Bobby Roode right, but whatever. That's it. What about Kurt Angle turning down the Hall of Fame induction?
I was going to ask about that. Like, what? I didn't quite understand the whole purpose of the whole thing, especially since they had that little ceremony the night before with, you know, however many people were there, and they had the little, they had all, everybody give him a speech, and Kurt goes up there for like 5 minutes and talks and whatnot. So, did the people get that, get their money back? Did they get a refund?
It's the Night of Champions ending all over again for Kurt Angle induction. Everybody's going to be pissed, and pay-per-view performers are going to have to give the money back. No, I doubt that. But here's the thing. Here's what I see. First of all, your Hall of Fame induction should take place at Slammiversary if you're TNA. Or I've even suggested they do two a year, one at Slammiversary and one person at Bound for Glory. I think we're in for another redemption story with Kurt Angle, because TNA loves the redemption stories. You know, it's been a year since the Jeff Hardy redemption story. Hopefully it doesn't involve him chasing the world title, but I think it's going to involve him, quote-unquote, earning his Hall of Fame induction is what we're in for with Kurt Angle. And it's probably going to involve Sting, based on what we saw here. Because, you know, we need to involve Sting.
Oh, my goodness.
Sting needs to put people... Sting's going to make Kurt Angle. He's going to make Kurt Angle a Hall of Famer. Like,
that match. Yeah, that match. Just like Patrick O'Dowd, I was on the verge of falling asleep during that Sting match.
I'm totally... What did I say? I said that I would be fine with Sting in a six-man tag match. And that's all I would want to see out of Sting from now on in TNA. No more Sting in one-on-one matches. It's just not – Sting's not the guy, brother.
Sting needs to stop doing – like, somebody tell him to stop doing the Scorpion Deathlock. Stop.
It's so bad. Matt Morgan has still not recovered from when he passed out in the weakest Scorpion
from
Deathlock
the pain.
Yes, the pain. Like Matt Morgan, I think, passed out from boredom. Not from the pain.
Yeah.
The embarrassment of it all.
The
shame.
Blew off Sting. The reason Magnus blew off Sting tonight is because he's mad at himself that it took him that long to beat Sting. That's what Magnus should say. Magnus to come out on Thursday and be like, I walked out because you suck and it took me that long to beat you despite the fact that you suck. So I cannot do Sting anymore. It's just I just can't do it. Like it's I'm sorry, but we got to do something about Sting, and that something can't involve.
Well, maybe old man Sting will finally leave TNA and go wrestle a really bad match with the Undertaker, because you know that's what happened.
That is gonna be such a letdown if it ever actually happens. People are gonna be so disappointed.
If Sting goes up for WrestleMania, I think that the WWE is smart enough at this point. I honestly think that it would be. I think the Sting would be involved in a 6-man tag match opposite the Shield.
And you would. That would make most sense. Yeah.
Because they're not stupid enough to put Sting in a 1-on-1 match.
Hey, Sting and Dustin Rhodes were good buddies back in the day. Dustin was part of the Stinger Squadron, so there's a connection.
Stinger Squadron.
Stinger Squadron. Wow. And they brought back the Main Event Mafia. Why can't they bring back the Stinger Squadron?
Yeah, like, right. They get Steamboat and Nikita and who the hell else was there?
Oh, who knows?
Stinger's part of that?
They might have been. I've blocked it out.
Flying Brian, I think. Yeah, that might be it. Well, they can't bring him back.
Probably not.
I don't think so. Hey,
too soon,
you know.
Too soon.
No, too soon? What was that like? How many years ago was that? Like 12 years ago?
That's just always the answer. It's always too soon.
Hey, I remember reading the hot news that Brian Pillman would come back, man, during the Attitude Era. He's going to do a run-in on, like, a WrestleMania or something.
Oh, yeah. What will he do next?
His death was at work.
His death was at work. That's right. He's hanging out at a bar somewhere with Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit.
Oh, now
now we've crossed the line.
Yeah.
No, with Nancy and Daniel, it was all fake, the whole thing.
Okay,
all right,
cool.
Is that better now? Doesn't it feel better?
I feel kind of dirty.
This is what TNA has done to us. Look what we're talking about, not TNA. This is what happens with Bound for Glory.
Your girl, Brooke, didn't win. I saw that. She lost.
Yeah.
In the women's match.
That's because Dave Lagana saw AJ hanging out with Tamina and thought we need to pair up Gail and Lady Tappa. That's
sure looked like it.
Because Lady Tappa is not ready for TV yet. She wasn't ready when she lost her gut check match and then got the contract, and she's still not ready. And all she can do is do run-ins and attack people, so what do? You pair her with Gail Kim, which is fine, because if I can't have Mickie James as my Knockouts champion, then give me Gail Kim. As my Knockouts champion. You know what they're going to do? They're putting the belt on Gail Kim, just waiting for Taryn Terrell to have the kid, get back into shape so she can come back and redo what she was supposed to do. This was supposed to be the night that Taryn Terrell probably won the Knockouts championship for Mickie James. Of course, contracts expire and people get pregnant. And
stupid
so
babies. Jeez.
Was she pregnant when she had those ladder matches, by the way?
No.
I wonder about that. Like when...
What's
really funny is that last week or the week before, she posted pictures of the little bump and announcing that it was a girl, and people are reporting she's pregnant if this is the first time they heard this information. Like, they forgot that 3 months ago they reported this information.
Maybe they only put reportedly in front of the initial reports.
Didn't TNA deny it 3 months ago when it originally came out? Didn't somebody there deny it? Like, said, no, it's personal stuff. I thought somebody vehemently denied it.
TNA was denying so much stuff at that point. Who knows?
So let's get back to the pay-per-view here, because we've done this again. This is the fourth time now. We've brought up a match and then left the match.
Well, at least we were talking that there was a reason. Okay, look, the match wasn't bad. And that's the thing about – I actually enjoyed that match. Like, it was a good match, even from, Brooke being the greenest worker in there, ODB it was a good match, but a bad finish. You know, again, like yeah. This is what Patrick Riddell was talking about.
So, I guess what would have been the finish? You knew Lady Tapa was going to get involved. Do you think the Cook answer? Because I think Cook were the one who said on the preview show that she should just lay out everybody and that be that.
I think maybe. No, I think I'm going to get Greg credit for that, actually. Now
wasn't
I think
you
about
Greg?
It.
I can't remember.
I think it was actually Steve. I think it was you.
I think it was okay. Steve, yeah.
I mean, I'll take credit for it. You know, I'm sure. Why not?
We don't listen to our own shows, so.
Yeah, because I predicted. I don't know. Maybe I didn't say. Who knows? I'll take credit for it. Group effort. Group effort.
Sure.
Go.
Yeah. One of us said it. So yay team and.
Yay team. Yay team. Wow, we just Louisville Cardinaled that one, Steve.
Oh wow.
Soon.
You have a vagina.
Speaking of bad team efforts and stuff just going wrong, how about my bad influence pick? That didn't go too well.
No.
I knew that headed downhill once they showed the Mr. Olympia guy on the pre-show. Like, I had no idea.
It was
like, shit.
I'm actually, like, that match was surprisingly good. And Jesse, to his credit, like, everyone who talks about Jesse and his work in OVW raves about the guy and how much he's improved and the fact that he's way better than people give him credit for. I'm okay with the bromans having the belts because they're an actual tag team. James Storm and Gunner need to be in singles. Well, James Storm needs to be in singles competition. Gunner probably
needs to be back on the indies.
Gunner probably needs to be TNA's or Dixie Carter's enforcer. He probably needs to be EC3's bodyguard at this point.
He's got the right moniker for it. Apparently he's, what, the modern Viking or something like
the modern,
that?
Yeah, they kept calling him like the modern-day Viking.
Yeah.
Yes, they're it's a combination.
They're trying to get that over.
The combination of the Berserker and Kerry Von Erich.
Give that man a hammer of some sort. So, you know what I'm saying? Give him Bully Ray's plastic hammer or something. If you can't find like a cool looking hammer,
they should go with him. That would be great. I would be.
Oh, that
I'd
would be awesome.
That would
bring
be.
Bring back John Norton and have him do it.
There you go.
Norton the Barbarian, the Berserker. I'm sure he's working the Hindi somewhere. They all are. So
Gunner, make him the enforcer and bring back his old buddy Murphy. They used to be enforcers, remember that?
Gunner and Murphy, of course.
Yep.
Yeah, and Murphy was like an old dude when he came out, so I think Murphy's probably done. He's probably bouncing somewhere. But I'm okay, you know, if you make Gunner the enforcer and let James Storm go out on his own, because James Storm, you know, I think this whole AJ thing would have been better with James Storm, at least from promo-wise. But AJ, face of the company, you know, people love AJ. Great reaction for AJ. I mean, last year, I was at Bound for Glory live. AJ got the biggest reaction of the night out of everybody, including Hogan. So I'm cool with the guy being aging. So tag team division, is it an all-time low or just bad? Or even, you know, think it could be better?
It's close, but I'll tell you what, though. I did think this is a pretty darn good match. I'll give the Bromans credit for stepping their game up, and Gunner and Storm looked all right, too. And the match is a lot better than I thought it would be. I think the fans kind of dug it, too, except for the part where the Bromans won, because I don't think anybody bought into those guys winning that match. And when they did win the match, everybody was just like, huh?
Yeah, it was a surprise. Kind of like, remember when James Storm and Gunner won the Slammiversary Bash? You could tell people were like, okay. Like, they were cheering for James.
It was very much I guess so. I think it's a tough, like, talking about the state of tag team wrestling in TNA, it's no better or worse, in my opinion, than the current tag team wrestling situation in the WWE. They have teams. They sort of treat them like a big deal for a little bit, then they get pushed back down. The end. Right now, it's in a high point of the WWE because they just had Goldust and Cody beat The Shield, and that's about as high profile as they've been for a while. But as we've seen time and time again, inevitably, it retreats back to the shadows. I don't know that it'll ever be what we want it to be because it's not 1984 anymore.
No, tag team wrestling.
You ain't on the list, bro.
Exactly.
Whoa.
Tag team. Like, what's funny is we probably won't see the bromance on Impact on Thursday. We'll probably see them next week. And
no,
just
they're
going to
have a celebration. I bet you there's something.
Will Mr. Olympia be there?
It'll probably just be like backstage packages. We probably won't see them. Here's the problem with TNA. They have a two-hour show each week, and they only put on four matches. So what can you know, you get eight matches over a course of 2 weeks. There's not a lot of time to put over anything, and you dedicate multiple segments to Dixie Carter and the main angle each week, so you're just not a lot of room for everyone else.
Not particularly. Speaking of not a lot of room for anybody else, that's how you had the Ultimate X match. You know, a bunch of guys you didn't have room for.
Yeah.
And shocker, that was the opener.
If the title's on the line. If the title's on the line, you know when it's going to happen.
I want to see his stat. I'm sure Patrick Riddell could find this out for us. Not today, but at some point. How many straight pay-per-view events has the X Division opened for TNA?
Every pay-per-view for the last 5 years.
And I understand it. With the Ultimate X structure and the way they put it up now, they lift a portion of it, and then they have to take down the bottom parts and take those away. And so maybe that's why it's always the opener. But that's something you can get over. You don't have to... Remember, they had to put the cage up old school style at Lockdown. They didn't even lower it from the ceiling. They literally carted it out piece by piece. This is TNA. This is what we're doing. Remember when the cage dropped from the ceiling in the Impact Zone in like four parts? That it was like fanned out and then dropped down.
Oh yeah,
that's
kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was cool. Not really, but again, you know. So tag team wrestling, bad. Again, the Ultimate X match was fine. It's the hard thing with the Ultimate X is you almost can't compare it to what we used to see in the six-sided ring. Like, those are some amazing matches, mm-hmm. and we can't and probably shouldn't do the things that we used to do because of people's well-being.
That finish. Woo, that finish.
What the hell's up with the ladder? That's part of my... I understand, you know, Jeff Hardy's known for the ladders, and Hardy introduced the ladder. And I'm not even... I don't know. Maybe it's not even that bad that they once, you know... LAX got in trouble for trying to use a ladder in Ultimate X match before. Kayfabe got in trouble.
I was thinking about that. I was trying to remember... I thought I remembered somebody using a ladder in Ultimate X match, and it didn't go over too well, but... You know, you've had some of these damn things by now. I guess it all just kind of flows into the same thing, and people lose track. And then you have Chris Sabin do his thing, get the title, which is fine, I suppose. I predicted it,
Poor Velvet.
Poor Velvet, yeah.
Huh.
She does pretty well at that role, though. I mean, much better.
She does. She's a great Elizabeth Velvet Sky.
Yes.
She really does make a great Elizabeth. I don't want to see her wrestle anyway. She sucks.
No.
I mean, Velvet Sky, like, she's not going anywhere because she's a TNA original. Not that there's anything special about being a TNA original, the way the company treats them. But Sabin is the X Division champion again. I'm really surprised because it seemed like they were putting some stuff behind Manic. Now we're probably not going to see Manic until January, the way TNA does things.
Probably.
Because we'll probably
are they going to do those one night only shows again?
Man, if they're back in the Impact Zone, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know if they have a contract for those or not. They could do all those again, and you'll have another Ultimate X show. So.
Can we talk to the four people that watch those and see if they're worthwhile? I don't know.
I guess Larry Zonka, he recaps them for some reason.
Has to? Yeah. It's like his job?
Yeah,
that's why. He can't convince anyone else to do it, so he kind of has to.
Huh.
Poor guy.
So, Greg, I do want to pull out, because it took like 2 seconds to look this. You know, we give a hard time on the X Division Championship match, like, leading off. This year, out of the four pay-per-view events that have happened so far, three out of the four opened with the X Division title. But the year prior, when a certain man by the name of Rob Van Dam held the X Division title, it didn't open shows.
Hmm.
It opened like one show prior, and that was prior to him winning it.
Well, his win opened a show. His win opened Bound for Glory last year.
Yeah,
his win was the opener Bound for Glory last year over Zima Ion. Not an Ultimate X-Men, but just pretty. So, Yeah,
right.
Whatever. The X Division has now ground to a screeching halt. Thank you, X Division.
Boy, that's, there's a lot of stuff here that's kind of ground to a screeching halt.
But that's the way the pay-per-view went off. And the thing was, I'm trying not to hate on the pay-per-view because the matches, a lot of the matches were good until the finishes. A lot of sour finishes, but a lot of good action leading up to those finishes. And so how much does a sour finish detract from the match in this case, Patrick O'Dowd? Like how, you know, if you're going to give a match, say, a 9 out of 10, what does a sour finish do to your overall impression of the match?
I think a poor finish to a match can kill its rating because, and we've talked about this on previous shows. We've talked about this, in talking about overall shows where the ending is what people walk away with. So It doesn't matter that Bobby Roode had a pretty solid match with Kurt Angle. All people really walk away from the match when it's all said and done is, yeah, it was this fine match, but it had such a horrible finish. It was such a ripoff. It's such a letdown. You want, at least, I would argue that most fans, they want a good match with a satisfying finish. And like every once in a while you can have something screwy, and it makes sense when it's in the context of either who the wrestlers are, what's going on. But they didn't tell that story in a lot of these matches, and then it had just goofed up, screwy finishes that didn't make a heck of a lot of sense. And really, the epitome of that on this show, in my opinion, is the Bobby Roode Kurt Angle match. Like that just was a horrible ending. It was a horrible way to end that match, and was not satisfying by any stretch of the imagination. And so for me, it makes that match now less good. You know, it takes it from, say, a 9. I'd say it takes it down to, like, a 6 or a 7 because finishes are important.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. And let's be honest. The whole reason for that finish was so Kurt Angle could, like, get off the stretcher and walk.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
That's why they did that.
It was all about Kurt Angle and making Bobby Roode look like, well,
the whole, reason Bobby Roode had his own fake Hall of Fame induction ceremony was so Kurt Angle could refuse medical treatment and walk.
And really, to take it, you couldn't even have Bobby be the reason that he got stretchered out. Like,
of course,
Bobby Roode, his whole character has been to do shit that's just out of line. And, you know, even if he lost and then just beat the holy hell out of Angle, like, at least that's in keeping with his character. That he got dropped on his ass, barely gets up after taking an Angle slam off the top rope where Kurt should have been able to get up and follow up with the pin, but somehow it was so devastating this time out of the 50 million times that he's done it that now he can't get up because he, like, ripped. And I think it was Tanay who said he wrapped the back of his forehead when he did it. Like,
the back of the forehead.
The back of his forehead. Because, you know, it's called the back of your head. Jesus. But anyway, like that was the end? That was the finish? Like, Bobby should have at least been able to hit something. Like, something.
That's also the problem. Bobby Roode doesn't have a finisher. So it'd be really, you know.
I don't care if he rips off a super kick. I don't care if he, you know, does. I don't care if he does, like, a power bomb or
could,
an Oklahoma slam or.
You could do a Shield Guy's finisher. Do a Shield Guy's finisher.
Do anything.
Yes, the knee.
The knee. Do it. Do something.
Shining Wizard, Patrick O'Dowd.
Yes.
There we go.
A shining wizard. If I see one more shining wizard,
I don't know about all that. Tell you what I do know. I mean, you talk about how guys like Bobby Roode have been ruined by TNA booking or whatever, but I do. I dare say we've seen the debut of Two Men Tonight, and they may not be ruined by TNA booking. I'm talking about Ethan Carr III and the great legendary Norv Furman.
Yeah. Hey, look. You know what? Yeah, look, good for Peter Avalon, Southern California talent, for getting a payday from TNA. You know,
absolutely.
I'm sure. Well, assuming he gets paid. Assuming he gets paid.
Yeah.
He asked for it in cash.
Right. Can you pay me before?
I think that jacket he wore out to the ring was his, like, thank you gift.
Oh, that was his payment.
Like, and there here you go.
Playing around Sting's closet.
And I got this lousy jacket.
And I've met I've met Peter Avalon at an Apex Pro event. Super nice guy. Glad he got this opportunity. Because, look, you saw Peter Avalon, okay, not going to be on television long-term in professional wrestling. Actually a very talented worker, but, you know, it's just kind of the way
like
it's going to
be. Yeah, you saw him.
He sounds like a champ. He knew what he needed to do. But why is this on pay-per-view?
But here's the thing, Greg. Actually, I'll tell you what. Out of all the, I was really okay with that. Because of this, again, when you look at how the story was told and pulled off, like, that's exactly what you would expect Auntie Dixie
sure.
to do for little Ethan at a pay-per-view, like on his big debut. You know, that to me, that was perfect. Like, it was a nice little rest before what we're supposed to. Again, I think we forgive it if the rest of the show is better. You know,
true.
I think if that had been before two really hot double main events, we're sitting there being like, oh, that was such a great rest. It took a little
true.
Break, you know, allowed the crowd to recover.
Cooling
because
the crowd
the
down for Sting and Magnus.
Yeah, but the crowd was asleep,
right.
But then they had a jobber squash
Sting,
match come out.
Sting and Magnus was our cool-down match.
Exactly. That's not good.
Well, and your two best finishes of the night were the Ethan Carter squash and the Bromans winning the tag team titles. So, that's just, you know. Again, pain. I feel pain even when I mention when Dixie Carter talked about how she had the perfect opponent lined up for Ethan Carter III, in the back of my head I was like, you know what, Dixie? Let's put him in the main event and have him win the title. Like
no.
Why not?
Triple
wouldn't
threat match.
Make sense? Wouldn't that make sense that Dixie puts the belt on her nephew? Like the guy's talented enough. He can do it. But why not? Like, if you really want to get the people talking,
I can't back that one. I'm sorry. If that had happened, you'd probably be loving it. And
yeah, would.
I would probably be having another one of my moments where I'm like, I'm done with TNA forever.
Yeah.
Like,
you
I'm
would,
done
yeah.
with TNA forever.
You would be having one of those moments. It would make the better radio show.
No, it would not. I would probably just drop the headset. I'd leave it behind. Be like, let's take over. I'm out.
They do like adding people willy-nilly to matches. Daniels pointed out in his promo during the evening, which we almost forgot the Great Abyss comeback to talk about.
Well, we didn't forget it. I just didn't want to bring it up.
Hold on. Let's back this up. You know, the one thing I will say is, because I want to go back to this squash match. You had two-thirds. I do believe there was a statement made of how can you not have Kazarian and Daniels on the main pay-per-view?
Yeah.
They did it.
On the pay-per-view.
But they were on like a backstage. But you know what I mean, like
right.
That and it's the same. I do think it's the same sort of thing that we talk about with the WWE a lot. That a lot of people get bothered by. That pre-show match, you know, if you love Antonio Cesaro or whatever, and he works the pre-show, I do see it, you know, in a lot of the light that Greg shares it, that it's supposed to be the thing that warms the crowd up. But some guy, most people don't know who he is, got to be out there on the pay-per-view. That would irk me if I was. Even if I was Chavo,
right.
And that's pretty low. I mean, Chavo kind of sucks a lot, but I get
well,
it.
Well, and TNA, I mean, I almost feel bad for TNA in like kind of like how you feel bad for someone who's just stupid and doesn't get it sometimes.
Yeah.
Because last year at Bound for Glory, they carved out Austin Aries for the live audience only, and they're like, cut a promo to get yourself over because we don't think anyone in this building knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
He goes out there, and people are chanting his name, and he's trying to get them behind him as a heel, and people are chanting his name. He comes out. He gets a face reaction when he comes out for the match, and it backfires on him. They get eliminated from they being bad influence, get eliminated from the Gauntlet match, and people boo because they wanted him to win.
Right.
It's like just listen to the people sometimes. Like, I'm not saying that you need to let the fans dictate all of your booking, but you know, that's why I thought that it should have been the Main Event Mafia versus Ego in a six-man tag match because that would have been more entertaining.
And it seemed like at the time that was where they were going to set this up. Like that was the butting of the heads and the clashing that was happening. But these guys are, they really are the equivalent of Eddie Guerrero, Benoit, Rey Mysterio in WCW. Like, that's how they're treated. Like, they're the most over guys in the building, and yet they're always either curtain jerking or, you know, wrestling each other, like, frequently. Like, how many times have we seen some variation of these guys feuding or working together? Like, it's what they are, and that's as far as they're going to go, unless there is a true, you know, sort of booking change that happens within the company. And I don't think there's going to be a true change like that.
Well, as long as the ownership's the same.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny because if you read, there was an interview with Larry Zbyszko, and most of it was bullshit because it's Larry Zbyszko, and
yeah,
he's not relevant anymore. So he's trying to be relevant.
He's an entertaining bullshitter, though.
He is, but he did make a great point. He was like 10 years ago, and it wasn't quite 10 years ago, but, you know, 7 years ago, TNA is putting on amazing matches with Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles. 10 years later, or 7 years later, they're putting on Christopher Daniels versus AJ Styles, and they're just not advancing the product at all. And they're bringing in, you know, and let's be honest, they're not really using that much WWE old talent anymore. Bully Ray was not Bully Ray in the WWE. He was a tag team wrestler. And Jeff Hardy was in the opener, and Sting was never in the WWE, but still, you know, and Kurt Angle is, you know, Kurt Angle's been in TNA for what, 7 years now or 6 years now? So,
no,
I think it's 7 years.
Almost as long as he's been in WWE, if not longer. Close.
Yeah, yes, he made his name in the WWE, but he's been in TNA for a pretty damn long time. So it's hard to really, they've really gotten away from a lot of those castaways. And another castaway, most people want Mr. Anderson back, and they're assuming he's probably going to come back on Thursday. A lot of people thought he would show up tonight. So I think that the WWE talent comment doesn't really hold true, but it's the internet complaining because we're not pushing the guys that we want them to push. Or when they do push them, like AJ Styles, they do it in a way the internet doesn't like by using Dixie Carter as a character, which I still don't think is really all that bad. But that's just me. I don't understand, why does Bully Ray need Dixie to hand him a chair in a no DQ match after he's already torn the ring apart, tried to use a hammer, and had two guys interfere on his behalf?
Well,
like,
Bully was tired. He was tired. He's blown up.
I feel bad for Bully Ray. Did you see, there's an interview out there with Bully Ray as part of the media blitz that TNA did for Bound for Glory. If you haven't seen it, go seek it out. It's on Wrestling. It's great because he's criticizing the booking. And he's like, well, what? Regardless of how they book us, we have to go out there and perform. Like, he himself is saying the storytelling is bad. And that
people saying that.
That's not even really that new, though. I mean, like, maybe not necessarily in an interview the way Bully did this time, but I mean, I've heard Joe go after the booking. There's no real fear of repercussion, it seems like. It's like, what are they going to do, fire us? So,
but it's weird because Austin Aries does it. And it's Austin Aries, and I love it, and we love Austin Aries, and great, and pull back the curtain, trying to get him on the show in the future. Hopefully that'll actually happen. Working on it. But Bully Ray's your world champion, about to go out there and main event what some are calling the most important show in your company's history, which seems to be every event for TNA, because it could always be the last, according to a lot of people, which probably isn't true. And he's out there criticizing. You're criticizing the people that put the world title on you. And that just, you know, probably didn't need to go there. But, hey, that's where TNA is. And if everybody's doing it, well, you can't fire everybody. Or maybe you could. That should be a better option for TNA. Just press
Ray
the reset button.
Ray knew he was losing.
What's that?
Ray knew he was losing the title. So he got mad because he's losing the title.
Right. Well, he's probably getting released. His contract's probably up, and he's probably not coming back. He's probably gone. This is
he never
take a pay cut.
They're going to
on Thursday. He's going to have to wrestle, and if he loses his job. That's how he's going to have to wrestle for the title.
Probably right. You're probably right, and he's probably going to win it back. That's what's going to happen. See what happened. This is like last week when Steve Cook blew the doors open on Ethan Carter's good for me. That's which I'm happy about, though. That's the thing. Like because they're pushing a talented wrestler and someone who's new and someone who we're not seeing all the time, and I'm happy about them pushing Ethan Carter. Obviously, we need to see more out of him. I'm glad we saw him in WWE because we know that he's capable of stuff. And the promos he's done already, I've enjoyed. I just like the character. I think it's fine. And if you're going to push Dixie Carter, at least use it to get somebody new over.
Who do you feud him with right now?
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to feud him with anybody at first or if they're just going to keep putting – they're going to Brodus Clay the guy. He's going to wrestle squash match after squash match, and he's you know, he'll probably wrestle a bunch. The same guy over and over. He'll get the El Matador treatment. Maybe he'll get a midget. I don't know.
El Matador. I mean, Los Matadores, don't ever sully the good name of Tito Santana with that horrible, horrible tag team, Greg. Shame.
Maybe Ethan Carter III can have a midget lion go out with him. Since
he's
lions, then maybe he can get a little midget lion. I think the best is yet to come for Ethan Carter III.
I agree with that. Absolutely.
TNA could look very different a year from now. But maybe that's just... I know, exactly. That's the thing. Maybe that's just wishful thinking. Who knows? Who knows? So, put a bow on Bound for Glory. Good matches, bad finishes for the most part. I would say a good show made worse by a lot of the decisions that they made.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of what Bully Ray and Austin Aries have kind of talked about, you know, their best efforts are somewhat being squandered by the quote-unquote office, the booking, who knows. And obviously they need to change. You know, Hogan didn't come back. Hogan wasn't even in the building. Hogan wasn't even in San Diego. I hope we never see Hogan in TNA again.
So there was a good development tonight.
Yes, no news was good news on the Hulk Hogan front. I think we'll see Mr. Anderson come back on Thursday. I'm excited about that. I like Mr. Anderson. He was doing some of the best work in his career in TNA, and I'd be okay with an Anderson versus Bully Ray feud. I don't know what's next for AJ Styles. I don't know what's next for the X Division. I don't know what's next for a lot of these people. And I think, you know, this is a very important edition of Impact Wrestling in you know, the hottest wrestling city in the world of Salt Lake City, Utah. So we'll I wonder how they're going to
the one with the most Mormons.
That's exactly. So if TNA does a special where husbands can bring all their wives for free, they might actually
take them off the compound.
That's right. One of them has to stay home with the 12 kids, but the other wives can come, and that'll be great. So as they prepare to replenish their celestial planet someday when they leave Earth. So that's our religious discussion.
I'm not going anywhere. I don't have anything to say about all that.
you confused religions. You went into Scientology there, pal.
No, there's actually a part of the Mormon belief that believes that. Believe it or not.
Oh, they both believe it too?
Yeah,
they
do.
They have a hat.
Yes. Oh, only 144,000, but that's okay. That's quite all right. So, again, Bound for Glory, you know, it is what it is. So, that's what we can do. Patrick O'Dowd, before we let you go, let's talk about some bullshit.
Sure, let's do some bullshit. Oh, I keep forgetting. We don't have any music.
No, not yet. Well, eventually.
You sort of started this up, so let's just dive right into the Hogan nonsense. Let's just call it the Hogan nonsense. There was so much that bullshit that is surrounding whether or not he's signing with who he's signing with. My favorite one is the current news report right now that Hogan is going back to the WWE because they were offering him too low of money, and that they were that was it like The Rock and Brock Lesnar make more in one match than Hogan would make in 1 year coming back for the WWE. Yeah, I mean, like, who says that? Like, where does that come from? Why?
Dave
really
Meltzer.
And you're kidding me, right? Like, as much as people don't want to admit it, and people refuse to admit it, there's still money in Terry Bollea, Hulk Hogan.
There's
money in it. And if he were to come back to the WWE, you know, Triple H has been on record as saying that, you know, he would welcome him back. Hogan probably wants to come back. I'm sure there's a little bit of ego and that there is some haggling going over how much, but I don't think he's asking for Rock Brock Lesnar part-time show up because we're big Hollywood star money. Even if, you know, and if what they're saying they make per match is true, then that's a lot of bread that the WWE is throwing around. Like, it just doesn't, to me, it doesn't compute. It actually hurt my head a little bit.
Hogan tweeted earlier today. He said, the calm before the storm, temporary situation setting me up for a huge blessing, brother, HH. And everyone's like, oh, you know, this is Hogan's gonna come back. I honestly think this is just Hogan being positive. I don't think this is meant to mean anything. And I don't even think Hogan's trying to make news here. He's just telling people, look, I don't know what I'm doing next, but I'll be back. That's kind of where I think this is Hogan.
And then as the talks and stuff progressed, there's this talk that suddenly there's this morality clause that's floating around that I believe exists, but I also question, like, again, I think that, yeah, Hulk Hogan probably could get a pass off that.
He probably could, but yeah, I've heard about the morality clause before and with some other performers that have questionable past that might
Mickey
have
James.
A tough time getting into WWE due to doing things before.
But I think that there's certain there's Hogan, and then there's Hogan and Flair, who as much as Flair has become a parody of himself and Hogan is the same, like, their names still hold value. They still pop a crowd in a huge way when they show up for a month at a time.
You know, the thing about the morality clause is morality clauses are clauses of convenience. You use them when you feel like you need to.
Yep.
And look, if the morality clause is used, then Hogan's in worse shape than he thinks. Then,
yeah.
and lest we forget, Hogan is coming from TNA, and three letters that WWE wants nothing to do with are TNA. And Hogan has distanced himself from the company while working for the company in a lot of his public appearances.
Yeah.
So I think Hogan did that on purpose. I don't think we're going to see Hogan in TNA again. I think we'll see Hogan in the WWE again, and that's really kind of the end of it for Hogan. I did get a tweet from somebody saying that Hogan now resigning obviously screwed up all their plans for Bound for Glory. I don't think it did.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Is the plans from the walk down to the ring during May event, I guess?
I don't know.
What else is he going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, unless he was going to do something to stop Dixie, like...
He's going to wrestle Kurt Angle.
Oh, Jesus.
Brother
Sometimes, down. The absence of Hogan is the best way to use Hogan.
Yep.
And that's the way it is for TNA right now. Yeah, morality clause, sex tape, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Then why does Caitlyn have a job? Because she took a lot of risque photos, and you know, why is Sean Waltman working as a scout? He made a porn tape with China. So, I mean,
yeah.
Really. Come on.
No, yeah,
Triple H had sex with a corpse on TV, and he's the COO. So
that's true.
And, but we're in the PG era now.
We are.
PG.
No,
sometimes
right.
You're very happy about that, like when you talk about having sex with corpses. You're very glad it's PG now.
Yeah, oh, thank goodness for that.
No kidding. So,
the other thing that I want to do before I go is a little bit of vindication for the bullshit that we see. We called bullshit a couple weeks ago on this possibility of turning Damian Sandow face because apparently when he wrestled Alberto Del Rio, people liked him more than they liked the evil heel champion, so they cheered him a little bit, and that meant that WWE was turning face. Well, thankfully, that report has sort of been retracted and turned around because he worked heel on SmackDown. So therefore, that they changed their mind. It wasn't that it was bullshit; they just changed their mind, or he was still working heel like he always does, and the crowd reacted accordingly because he wasn't wrestling another heel that they like less.
When you put a heel versus a heel, what did you expect the fans to do? Boo them both?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Here's the thing about professional wrestling. We all love the yay boo chant, right? We love yay boo, and wrestling fans are more than been happy to do a yay yay chant. But we have not reached the level of snarkiness of a boo boo chant just yet. So I don't know three things.
I don't know, back in the WWE ECW days, like that Batista Big Show match, they have got booed pretty good.
True, true. And of course the Brock Lesnar Goldberg match.
Oh,
yeah.
Where the referee went over. That was.
But there's a little bit, I mean, in both of those that you're describing, and especially the Gold, there's other things that were impacting the crowd that had nothing to do with the characters. Which,
alcohol.
That, yeah, well, you know. But you know what I mean. Like, I also think that, you know, when you talk about certain ECW crowds, that they are their own, like, they're their own animal.
Right. The crowd was the star of the show in a lot of ways.
Yes.
I mean, let's be honest. The biggest criticism that comes out of an ECW today is that you, professional wrestler, nearly kill yourself, and they chant the company's name, not yours. The company that's laid on your pay is bouncing checks and is about to fold. They're chanting that. Don't care about you at all. So, which is kind of TNA today. But that's a whole other topic. So, what about the small guy report, Patrick O'Dowd? What happened to the small guy report?
Oh, yeah. I just didn't know. I didn't know if you were going to give me time for all three of them, so I was trying to lay them all out.
You already threw the bonus one in there, so go.
Oh,
you can go.
Sure. All right. So the other report that was floating around that I can't remember where I read that. I think that was also from our good friends at the Eddie's at the Insider of the Torch.
It was the Meltzer trifecta this week.
It was the Meltzer trifecta this week.
Trifecta. Nice.
But basically, the news item that came out was that the WWE's current feelings on signing smaller guys and indie wrestlers are down because they don't feel that they have enough of sort of the chiseled big guys that they like, and that unless somebody is really, really good, the WWE is not going to sign them. And then along with that they also don't want to sign ROH guys right now or independent guys who sort of know the deal or already have bad habits and are on a name level where they don't necessarily need the WWE. The WWE has to make them. There's a couple of reasons why I picked this one. My first is that this is not a new story. This is not even a new piece of bullshit. Like, this is something that we've heard
for
decades. Yeah, for decades upon decades. It's always been the story about the WWE is, they don't like little guys. Little guy Vince McMahon hates them, and so on and so forth. And now, you know, the top guys in the company that are the most over right now, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, aren't big guys. So, of course, then the natural speculation is they don't want more small guys. It's the same thing with the guys who are names on the indies and not wanting to bring them in. There's always been this story that's been floating around the WWE for years that they don't like to bring in guys that they don't make themselves. Because they want to have that sort of level of ownership. And while, you know, that there may be some truth to this report or what's going on, it's not new. And I don't entirely buy it because I think that where they are now, that they have gotten to a place where on some level they do recognize talent and ability and work it like they do. So, you know, maybe it's not 100%, but I'm calling bullshit on the story.
I think this report is more about Davey Richards than anything else, because Davey Richards probably has what they're talking about. And Davey Richards probably does have bad habits, and we know about some of the things that Davey Richards has done, and the WWE probably doesn't want Davey Richards. And that's okay, because I think Davey Richards probably doesn't want the WWE, really. Like, he'll do it financially, because he's given up everything in his life for professional wrestling. He doesn't see his kids, he's divorced, he's lost it all, just so that he could drive around, you know, the Midwest and stiff promoters for money. So, Davey Richards is given everything for wrestling and is trying now to get something in return, and it's not going to happen from the WWE. Look, he can probably get on with TNA pretty easily, though. So far be it from us to worry about that.
Does Davey still rock the Chris Benoit look? Because that would hurt him too.
Probably. If you're going to make up a report that. You know, report that they didn't want David Richards because he brings up memories of Chris Benoit. Like, let's report that. How many casual fans right now even think about Chris Benoit anymore? Like, really?
How many hardcore fans even think about Chris Benoit, really?
I know. It's true. Like
now, other than it being my weird, twisted obsession, like, I can't think of a lot of people.
That's true. That is true. And it's funny that you lump Eddie Edwards in, which the guy is supposedly a pillar of professionalism.
He's not part of the Teen Ambition thing. I mean, he's never really in with these guys.
He's one of the Dojo brothers with Roderick Strong. And we'll probably get a report next week that Eddie Edwards has been signed. And has to cancel his indie bookings. And that'll be the last we see of Eddie Edwards, because he already has a WWE name, too. Like, I don't know what they're going to call him. I don't know what they're going to do. Like, you can't reverse his name and
Edwards,
call him something else.
Make him a lawyer and call him Edwards.
Eddie is what he's going to be.
Eddie Edwards.
I did just think of a great marquee match that that Davey could work with the WWE, though.
What's that?
He'll work with El Torito.
Oh. Yes, which El Torito might be taller than Davey Richards. Take that, indie fan.
I can see Davey working like the real American gimmick. He's been American Wolf before. Why not?
He could.
Yeah. American Strong Style, yo.
Go search YouTube and search for Darren Corbin's Wrestling Reflection videos and find the one where OG Davey Richards walks in, because then it's just hilarious. Like, Davey Richards is like, what up, dogging him left and right. And it's so funny. Like, there's a side of Davey Richards that if someone tapped into would be crazy entertaining. And they just choose not to use it. And maybe Davey doesn't want to, because we all know how serious Davey Richards is and how he has to put the opponent over after he beats him all the time on the microphone. And this is why they probably don't want Davey Richards. Good for them.
I think he's more open to, you know, being comedic and stuff than some people think he is, and probably more open than some people like, per se, Loki. I think he would probably fare better in the environment than...
You mean
Loki
the now-retired Loki?
Yes, that guy.
Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be back in 2014. I said it in my column, Wrestling Inc. When is a retirement not a retirement? It's when you're using Twitter to make a political statement. That's what that is. Loki's just trying
to find somebody to book him. That's kind of the problem.
Right. They're willing to pay $1,100, which is supposedly the asking price for Loki. So, because I'm sure Ring of Honor would have brought him back by now if he could have. They're willing to bring back lots of people, including Paul Lund, who's getting ready to wrestle at the next big event. So, lots of bullshit out there, Patrick O'Dowd. Every week. By the way, next week will be another pay-per-view reaction show, the third and final pay-per-view reaction show for the month of October. Thank you, professional wrestling, for putting three pay-per-views in 1 month after we move to Sundays. You guys are more than welcome to come back for our pay-per-view prediction special that Chad and I will be doing later in the show, because I remembered earlier today that we have to do a pay-per-view preview. There's only three matches announced. So, like the last pay-per-view we had to do for WWE. That's just another topic about their pay-per-views. So
I'll email you my predictions.
There, just so you can have them on record in case...
We don't want to let the fans down.
You can do them right now. Randy Orton versus Daniel Bryan. Who wins?
Daniel Bryan.
Steve?
Daniel Bryan, too.
I'm going to go Daniel Bryan as well. I think they finish that one up and do that. So all for Daniel Bryan. CM Punk versus Ryback and Paul Heyman.
God.
I don't want to watch that match.
Really? I'm thinking Ryback and Heyman. Maybe
in
Punk
the cell,
gets
right?
Or something. Yeah, maybe Punk gets injured because you hear the bullshit about him like being injured and stuff. So.
Right, exactly. Needing time off and all of that. So Ryback.
I'll side on that one too.
I actually am too, and I think this is why we turned Big E face, is because we needed someone to feud with Ryback, and I think that's what's going to happen. So I'll go for that. Last, my favorite, John Cena challenging Alberto Del Rio.
Do we really have to predict that?
Yes, we
it's
do.
On the card.
I mean, my God, I can't pick Alberto Del Rio. You kidding me? It's John Cena, man.
The one thing they could do is that Cena's coming back from an arm injury. Alberto Del Rio's finisher goes after the arm. Maybe.
All the more reason for Cena to win. That should go down.
Overcome the odds.
He'll probably stand up, lift Alberto Del Rio up with one arm into the AA. Thus, I'm going to call that finish right now.
I didn't get to finish my prediction. I said that's what they could do.
That's what they could do. But what will they do?
It's not what they're going to do, because John Cena must win title. Therefore, John Cena will win title.
That means before the end of 2013, we'll likely see the World Heavyweight Championship defended in the main event again.
Yes.
Okay.
All the more reason to further upstage Daniel Bryan, because everyone else needs to do that in the WWE.
Even his girlfriend.
Yeah, she's probably going to get a bigger push than he is. So, who knows? Look, and you know what? It may turn out that our worst fear to recognize Daniel Bryan was only getting a push because John Cena was hurt. Maybe that comes true. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, awesome. All right, so that's going to do it for our pay-per-view coverage. Stay tuned. We're going to go to a quick break, and I'm going to go get the guest, Gabriel Gallo. It's going to be a lot of fun. He doesn't hold back, and I'm good friends with him, so it's going to be a fun interview, and definitely listen to it. And then Chad's going to be on. Tony said he's probably going to be too drunk to come on, so I don't think Tony's going to be on. We'll talk some wrestling as well. And then, yeah, we'll be back next week with yet another pay-per-view recap show. And then, after the pay-per-view recap next week, Candice LeRae will be on the program. So,
nice.
Yeah, which means she'll probably, and I probably won't be able to ask her about her TNA trial. So that's just usually the way things go with guests and TNA. As remember, Leva Bates couldn't talk about it, and yet Patrick Radd found a way to bring it up. So
I did.
It was awesome. So, wonderful. Gentlemen, thank you very much, and we'll do this again soon.
All right, later, man.
There we go. Patrick O'Dowd and Steve Cook signing off for the evening. So I don't have Patrick O'Dowd here to select a little bit of a break song, so I am just going to play one myself. Still can't play Bad Street because you just don't know and what's going to happen with that song. Don't want to get us in any trouble. So we'll play something different. I'm actually searching for the song now, so I do apologize for the holdup because I want to make sure that we have enough. So in honor of the wonderful performance put on by Sting tonight, we will play The Man Called Sting.
This is the One Girl Revolution, Taylor Hendricks, and you are listening to The Greg DeMarco Show.
Marco Show.
Thank you, Greg. Oh, I want to say, Greg, I love you. I'm serious. I love you. Greg DeMarco, I love you. This is Dougie Nova, and I just want to let all you guys know that I love Greg DeMarco. True, I can't help it.
Greg DeMarco Show.
Scarlet Bordeaux, and that's not, that came off really weird. Oh my god, see, this is what happens when you're trying too hard. That's what happens. That's, I just gotta, this is, third time's a charm. This is the Perfect 10 Scarlet Bordeaux, and you're listening to the Greg DeMarco Show, the only show, the best show on the web.
Because you know you're so
See, I'm gonna get off the phone. I'm gonna think of something so much better.
Greg DeMarco Show.
We are back on the Greg DeMarco Show, and I'm super excited to bring on the air right now a guy that I have known for the better part of 6 years, a gentleman in the world of professional wrestling who goes about things the right way, and don't be surprised that I continually refer to him by his last name during the interview, because that's what I've always known him as, and that is Star of Slam U Pro, and so much more, which we'll talk about today. Good friend of mine, Gabriel Gallo. Gabriel, welcome back to the Greg DeMarco Show.
What up? What up, what up, what up, guys?
Now, this is good. It's actually because tonight was a pay-per-view night and everyone else on our programs on the East Coast, it's just me and you this time. And, and Gallo's been on before to talk about Slam U Pro, but Gallo is just going to be a fun interview in general, and there's so much about this guy that, unfortunately for you, a lot of people don't know, but they should know, and that's why I want to bring it to them. And for our listeners, some of this may be talk about Arizona Indies, and that's fine, because it's also just kind of a look into the world of political professional wrestling. So it'll be a fascinating discussion for that, even if you don't care about Arizona independent wrestling. But Gallo, you know, a lot of the stuff I know, but our listeners don't. Take them back. Like, you've been at this for, what, 13 years?
Actually, this month, October, yeah, marks 13 years. I'm 13 going into years. 14 years now.
Yeah, so when did you get your start for our listeners? Let them know.
I started here in Arizona. It's kind of a weird story, because I originally started training to fight. And I had always wanted to be a wrestler, and I had I was dealing with a broken ankle, and I saw an ad to go to a wrestling school. Now, that wound up being a big funk story. The guys were just slash and burn artists trying to take money and train you the wrong way in wrestling, and I wound up actually refracturing my ankle because I just taped it up and went.
Right.
And after 3 months of basically learning nothing, I wound up refracturing my ankle, and I was out for a while, barely able to walk, and then I wound up meeting through a friend, you know him, CC Star. And that's how I started training to really be a wrestler, was in with CC and in his soon-to-be Western States Wrestling. It was the first company, I think, that was running full-time out here probably since the original Arizona Wrestling Federation back in the 70s. There hadn't been another company in Arizona really since then, except for, you know, the occasional indie that would just pop up or lucha show.
Right, which we still have planned. Arizona, for anybody that is an Arizona listener, the issues that we have with indies in Arizona, nothing new for this state. It's been going on forever.
Yeah, it's not like the guys that were running 20 years before that were any better than some of the other ones. You know, they would do stupid shit and get themselves kicked off the air and TV, and that's pretty much how come there was a dead spot. Last story I heard was I don't know if you ever heard this story, but I was told that the last TV episode they ever had was in like 80 or something, and they burned an American flag on TV and lost their TV deal the next day, and there wasn't another wrestling show in Arizona until CC and Cowboy Bob Yuma started running shows again.
That's funny.
That was, you know, that was with the class I was training with. You know, it was Mike Knox. Mm-hmm. Was one of the instructors. He would come out and do the shows, and he would train the guys before the shows. And Nav was training everybody, Navajo Warrior, and Lexi Fife would come out from Florida. And Sin, those are the guys that pretty much started, that taught me was, you know, I was being trained by CC and Sin. Sin was the old Western States heavyweight champion, and he's the one that taught me to bump, and Knox taught me everything else, and Nav taught me psychology, and it was a go from there. You know?
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't learn the psychology for years, actually, but they tried to.
he thinks he knows, but that's a whole nother issue.
We could bring that up. We could bring that up.
We will. We all have stories about Steve, as a lot of people call him, but the Navajo Warrior. But you found your way to UPW in California as well.
Yeah, I've been wrestling for probably, well, like when I started wrestling with Western States, you know, we were only doing a show a month, and it was like me and Hollywood Yates. We were married to each other for a little while, and then I wound up teaming up with Nav. I was pretty much trained to be Nav's tag partner.
Right.
And we started going on the road for like Henry Hubbard and, you know, wrestling, you know, that which was awesome, you know, going doing all these, like I would probably do an indie show every weekend. Wrestling was hot back then, you know, 2000, you know, in the 2000, beginning 2001, wrestling was still booming.
Right.
We were doing indie shows for Henry Hubbard on military bases and other places, and they were like, you know, Chuck selling out, you know, we had like Public Enemy on those shows and Jimmy Snuka and Greg the Hammer Valentine, and we had like 400 people on those shows. And that's where I first started learning was from like me and Nav always wrestled the Ballard Brothers. And Nav was already working with, and Knox was on those shows, and Nav was already working for UPW with Mike Knox and the Ballards, and then eventually he just transitioned us into going out there too. So, you know, it was me and Nav, you know, Native Blood, and we wound up feuding in UPW with Mike Knox and his tag partner at the time, Marshall Knox, for pretty much it was an ongoing feud either between them or between Knox and eventually, you know, Hollywood, and eventually, you know, Derek Nykerk, they teamed them up in there, and it, all the way through the time in UPW, the Cowboys against
people,
the Indians pretty much.
Yeah, I know. Old school. But if people don't know, you're talking about Hollywood Yates, of course, you know, current country music star, and was Wolf on American Gladiators. So, as some people might be wondering who that person is, that's kind of his biggest claim to fame. And good for him. He's made something out of all that. Not in the world of wrestling, but, you know, he's definitely got something going. So, which is good. So you talked about the psychology and that you learned or didn't learn from Navajo Warrior. So what was psychology like for you first breaking into the business? Like, what did you think it was? What were you kind of taught it was?
Well, like, that's weird. It's been so long to even think about back then, but if I was to watch one of my matches now, I'd probably be like, what the fuck was I thinking? But, like, when you first start in, you know, you think psychology is moves and just getting moves in and, you know, going all the way through the match until somebody eventually wins, you know. And I remember, you know, Nav and Lexi and Knox and everybody would try to explain it to you, but it's for every little bit of psychology you get, there's a much broader picture that you never really pick up on until, you know, you've done it a lot. And luckily, you know, thankfully I got taught pretty much on the road. You know, I only trained with CeCe and them for probably about 3 months before I started wrestling, because I was just able to pick things up real quick. And then I was brought on the road. So I learned everything else on the road, listening to guys like, you know, Valentine and Snuka. Now I'd listen to them talk out matches and just watch them in the ring, how they would react with the crowd. And eventually over the years I started to get it. And psychology is a lot of working with the crowd, you know. There's an in-ring psychology, but then there's also the psychology of the most important part is transcending what you're doing into the ring, into the crowd, and making that person in the crowd, whether it be one person or the entire crowd, feel everything that's going on. And that's, I started to finally get that, you know, was connecting with the crowd. That took a long time, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Because how much of your early psychology was just, you know, let's continue to, you know, take a lot of heat so you can make the hot tag to the Navajo Warrior. And I'm sure that was plenty.
Oh,
of,
yeah.
You did.
That was a lot of it.
Yeah,
that was
well,
a lot of it, and especially when we would get stuck in, you know, even without Nav, when I would get a singles match, you know, and you wouldn't really react on the crowd. The crowd would be going silent, and yet you'd keep just going and going and going and hitting spots and everything, and not realizing that sometimes the best thing psychology-wise to do is go home, go into something else.
Yeah,
you know, stop what you're doing and do something that works. You know, you're just trying to just hit all your shit. I saw this on TV.
Yeah.
This looks cool.
Exactly. Let's get that in. And but you also, you know, you're not just a wrestler in the Southwest either. I mean, you've been all over the world thanks to professional wrestling. What was your first trip overseas? How did that come about?
Actually, it was with UPW. We started. There was a feud in Japan between 01 and the NWA. And UPW, it was like pretty much the American faction fighting against, because UPW and NWA were kind of teamed up over there, and it was the Americans versus Hashimoto's 01 Japan company, and they 01 brought us out. They brought a lot of the UPW guys out, but they started bringing me and Navajo out. They really dug the old gimmick we used to do, the native blood, you know. Because you remember when we used to do it, we weren't just like we wouldn't do this traditional Indian thing. We'd come out with the skinwalker face paint and the wolf skins, and I would blow fireballs up in the air, you know, Nav would do the war dance around and everything, you know, and they really dug that in Japan, like that, and just the chops and everything. Like, that was a whole different experience going over there, I'll tell you that.
Yep. Oh, I can imagine.
I was 2 years in. If barely 2 years in when we start on my first trip over there, and here we are, semi-main event with Masato Tanaka and Shinjiro Otani, you know, right before Hashimoto and Dan Severn for the NWA World title, you know, 2 years in, I was like, this was, what the fuck is going on, you know? There's definitely no psychology in my part in that match.
No, you're getting your ass handed to you, basically, is what's happening there. Yeah, you're... I'm sure Nav's like, you can take that, right? Okay, good.
Oh, it's funny. You watch it now. Like, I remember I watched it with Nykerk and Derek Nykerk, and he's watching. He goes, you know, every time there's, like, major shit going on, Nav tags you in, right? And I was like, yeah. Blown sky high. It's a 25-minute match. I'm in it 20 minutes.
And he wasn't even that old back then. That's the best part.
No. On Nav's behalf, he did have he had just come back from knee surgery. I'll give him that.
No, that's true. Trust me. That is true. So I'll jump around a little bit because I mentioned as you were coming on, and I've mentioned before, you for some reason in this world of professional wrestling that is all about, you know, politically backstabbing and you've got to screw someone before you get screwed. And I heard, you know, had that lesson told to me by Ring of Honor when I was working for them when they came out in 2010. That was like, you know, he flat out told me sometimes it's business screw or be screwed. You tend to go about business the right way. Like you make sure everybody gets paid when you're behind the show, you do everything. What taught you that and how you ended up being so different than most people?
I didn't like getting screwed. I've probably been screwed more in my 13 years of wrestling than a fucking 20-year veteran of a whorehouse. I don't know why. I've been fucked over a lot, and I didn't like it. I've always tried to do it differently. Yet it somehow still seems to work out most of the time that even if you're trying to help everybody out, there's always somebody that'll take advantage of it and wind up fucking everything up and screw it over. Or you wind up trusting the wrong person. Like, when you say it's either screw or be screwed in the world of professional wrestling, it really is. And I know I've been sat down and talked to by a lot of really important people, you know, and they've always said, you know, sometimes you got to be a little bit selfish and you got to do what's best for you. But it's really hard sometimes, you know. I want to see, like, other people get ahead and get a spot. Like, I feel good when I have a kid that I train and he starts popping and going places, you know. I feel good when I see one of my guys get picked up or anything or go somewhere. It's weird for me, you know. I should, I guess, be more selfish and, you know, maybe step on more people so I can get to other spots and call favors in. But I just don't like doing that. I've always been like that. That's probably how come it's been, I've been screwed over so many times.
You know, funny story about that. I'll take you back to the end of IZW, Impact Zone Wrestling, obviously a company that Gallo was a big part of throughout pretty much its entire history.
I actually started the wrestling side of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, funny that it took that long for you to hold the heavyweight title, by the way, because I remember that night. And
the only reason I got that heavyweight title is because there was nobody else they could put it on.
I still remember. I was ring announcer that night, and there was a five-way match, and Lawrence Tyler was going to be the first one out. And I remember, like, we're going over the booking and everything, and I'm the announcer, so I have to know the finishes. And I was like, Steve, Navajo Warrior, I was like, who's going over? And he's like, Gallo. And I was like, really? Like, it just, for some reason, I was like, all right, great. And I was excited about that. Like, I remember talking to somebody backstage, and I'm like, it's about time that Gallo gets to do this. And you put on a hell of a performance that night, I don't mind saying. When IZW was in its quote-unquote dying days, I had taken over sort of running the website, and they asked me to keep it open. And they asked me what I could do to do that. And they basically, and I say they, it's Navajo Warrior and Hawaiian Lion, I'm still friends with. They were like, how much? And so we came up with a price that they were supposed to pay me to do all this stuff. And how many times do you think they paid me, Gallo?
None.
Zero, yes, exactly. So we're working with one of these school shows that IZW was famous for, you know, where it's a fundraiser for a school, but yet they make the most money. And they gave, they had, you know, the IZW world title, the generic indie belt that a lot of companies had. So they gave it to me, and they're like, hey, you know, see if we can do something with this, like refabricate the belt, make it look nice, whatever. I'm holding the belt right now, Gallo. I still have it. The company shut down after that. It's completely stripped down. It's completely one color as I was getting to work on it. And the company never worked again, and so I just never gave it back. So my payment for doing this, all that work for them, is that belt that all you guys have worn. I literally have it right now. And my son plays with it. My son plays with it. He sometimes he's a world champion, and sometimes it's a field for Lego guys to play on. And I actually thought about bringing it and letting you guys use it at SlamU Pro somehow. But it's still mine. It'll always be mine. That's my payment. The biggest payment I've ever gotten in professional wrestling
is
this belt.
The biggest payment that's ever come out of IZW. So
yeah. I'll never forget. They paid me twice in all the work, and I didn't work for them very long. One night I was handed $20. I'm not even sure why. I was announcing that night, and I got paid. And then, well, I've been paid for some of it. And then there was another night, there was some event, and there was actually an envelope with money in it with my name on it, which, you know, they had never done previously to that. So
was that like the Rec Center show or something like that? Yeah, I think I got one like that too, which is why it was probably one of the only times I ever got a money in an envelope, because I always would get the shady money punch in the palm of the hand fucking handshake. I hate that shit.
That's what I got the other time. I got the handshake $20 bill is what I got.
I was given an envelope or pull me aside and say, here's what I got for you. Don't be all shady and like putting your hand and hand it to me like nobody else in the locker room can fucking see it.
What's funny is, you know, we were cleaning up after the show, and he hands me this, and I think within 2 minutes I was gone. I was like, because I wanted to make sure that nobody realized the mistake that they had made, and so I was out the door. But yeah, I've got this belt, and so I kind of feel like everything I did for ICW was worth it, because, you know, I got a belt, and it brings great joy to the family. So,
Greg,
you ever wonder where that belt went?
Let me ask you a question, Greg. It's a personal question. After IZW shut down, you had the belt.
Mm-hmm.
You walked around your house naked with the belt on and looked your shoulders at yourself in the mirror, didn't you?
At least once. Yeah, at least once. I got out of the shower and was like, oh, there's the belt. No one else is home. Yeah, and you know what? I'm not the only one. Other people do that. I mean, let's be honest. Come on. That's just what people do. You know, when Rising Phoenix Wrestling made a world title, Lawrence Tyler went grocery shopping with the world title. Like, that's just what they do. It's just, you know, people love belts. Like, let's, you know, there's a belt mark out there. There's plenty of us. And I like belts, too. I don't own any other belts. I know some people that own tons of them. But this one is different because no one else.
I've only marked out for one belt.
Which one?
When we won the AWA World Tag Titles. That was the only belt that I marked out for. But we were not allowed to keep them. We always had to turn them back into Dale Gagne afterwards. We weren't allowed to walk around with them because they were the original silver belts that were used in the original AWA promotion.
Right.
And I marked out when we won those. But I never really marked out for any, like, when we won the Florida Championship ones and everything else. I never really marked out for them because to me they were just 35 pounds more in my bag, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and then you pay extra.
Because all those old belts, like the Florida ones, were like they were really nice, but they were like the old Reggie Parks originals. And man, those things were 40 pounds a piece. And
oh,
they
yeah.
were awesome. I'd be like, this is great. I'm putting it away now because this thing's got me.
I remember an interview with Randy Orton once where he was asked, you know, do you prefer to hold, you know, which belt's more important to you, the WWE Championship or the World Heavyweight Championship? And he said the World Heavyweight Championship because it weighs 12 pounds and the WWE Championship weighs like 40. So, you know, the thing that we don't realize as fans is, you know, where I'm coming from, so to speak, and everything. So you talk about, you know, in this country, the United States of America, where all have you had the opportunity to go, and what kind of sticks out for you?
Let's see, obviously Arizona. I've wrestled in Arizona, California. I wrestled for about 4 or 5 years in Oregon. Wrestled in Texas. Done a lot of shows in Texas, New Mexico, Boston. I worked for New England Championship Wrestling a couple times. Florida. Florida and Oregon are probably my two favorite places. And NorCal. I actually finally started doing NorCal because I avoided California for a long time after UPW because UPW kind of left a bad taste in my mouth towards a lot of stuff. I have a lot of SoCal wrestler friends, but I don't really enjoy the SoCal wrestling scene. I think... and I'll probably catch heat from a lot of my buddies down there, but I really don't enjoy SoCal wrestling. I think it's real spotty, and I think it's not a lot of psychology, and I think that 90, I'm not going to say all of them, because, again, I have a lot of friends that are SoCal wrestlers, but I think 90% of them will step on you to get ahead without even the benefit of a payday, which I think is really stupid. But I really like NorCal, and I really enjoyed my time in Florida, and I really enjoyed my time in Oregon. Those two places, like I was in Florida for probably 3 years straight, and working for Florida Championship Wrestling back when it was Bill Brown's promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And for or I worked in Oregon for a good 4 or 5 years for my buddies Pat and Jeff. They run the West Coast Wrestling Federation up there, and it used to be an AWA, and that's how I started going up there, was because I was an AWA representative, so I was going up there for Gagne to make sure it was going good, and then they became themselves, and then they eventually became NWA, and
right.
And now they're like CWF or something like that, but I worked for them for a good 4 or 5 years and had a lot of fun up there. I used to go up there and train classes and spend, you know, double shot weekends up there, and that was always a fun, like I said, like Florida and Oregon were always the best. Florida because I learned how to really work down there.
Mm-hmm.
With guys like Blackhearts and Abuna Dean and Kevin Sullivan, you know. I got my first pair of boots in Florida, which I still have. They were given to me from Desperado Joe Gomez. You know, they were a gift to me. And it was just a lot of fun, you know, working. We worked everybody in Florida. That's one thing I got to say. Me and Nav, we're social now, but, like, there's a lot of heat. There's a lot of bad blood between us and a lot of, you know, I got screwed over a lot by him. And I obviously did a lot of, you know.
Who didn't?
During that war time, I fucking, you know, did my best to fucking jab the knife back at Nav a bunch of times, you know. But the whole time we were a tag team, you know, especially in Florida, we worked a lot of good guys. You know, we worked the Vandals, you know, we work, you know, Warlord and Barbarian, you know, we'd work Christian York and Joey Matthews,
mm-hmm.
you know, Mickey James was our manager when we were down there, you know, it was a lot of fun down there. Florida was a great place, and I learned how to really work, you know, because that was where I learned my favorite part of wrestling, you know, going in on the fly. Because not one
yep.
guy down there, one of those guys would ever call anything, and it was great. That's what I love about wrestling, is just going in and having fun,
mm-hmm.
and just going on feel, because that to me is all wrestling is. It's all feel, you know. It doesn't matter if you do a triple indie moonsault with a fucking Kendo stick shoved up your ass off the top rope, if the crowd doesn't respond to it, because you can make the crowd react better to a headlock sometimes.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, you know, those guys were just awesome to learn from, like Davey and Crusher Thompson and all those guys were just awesome, you know, just go out there and just go on the fly.
Yeah, and you worked, I didn't even know you worked some of those guys. That's cool to hear from my perspective. I want to go backwards because I've talked on this show about, you know, the limited experience that I've been lucky enough to have in the world of pro wrestling. And when I moved back out to Arizona, I got hooked up with Rising Phoenix Wrestling, and we did okay. And at the time, of course, IZW was I guess, going strong for IZW. And what – I kind of want people to understand what goes on behind the scenes. So what kind of things were you guys told? Like, we were always – it was rumored that, like, guys were told not to work for us and you know, or if they did, they –
Oh, yeah. There was meetings about not having anybody work for you guys. There was. Like, you know, and – no, honestly, I never worked for you guys for the longest time until, like, the second time
right.
I came back. But mine was because I was always loyal to the one company I was in. And even though I got fucked over a lot in IZW and I lost, you know, like when I started it with Nav and everybody, and then I wound up somehow getting it taken away from me and just wound up being a wrestler instead of an owner, you know, and all this bullshit and just all the fuck jobs in the wrestling company.
Right.
I still was loyal to the brand because that's what I always worked for in Arizona. And to me, and that's something I've always been, is I don't like whoring myself out that much. Like, If I was to work there and then I was to work for Rising Phoenix, it was kind of like, you know, all those guys did that, like Jay Garland, LT, all
mm-hmm.
those guys. They go work for anybody that'll fucking let them work. And, well, what makes you special? Why does anybody
right.
want to come see you on this show for $10 when they can see you on this show for $5? Or why do I want to see you this week when you're here when I know you're over here every week? You know,
right.
And what separates the companies at that point? You know, that's like another problem
mm-hmm.
in SoCal to me. All the companies are the same. You have the same
yep.
guys working for all of them, you know? So what's the difference between going and seeing this company and going to seeing this company? Just, you know, to me, it never made sense, so I'd always just stay with IZW. Now, I worked every Lucha show that was going on, but Lucha was different, you know?
Different everything.
That's a different scene altogether, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But... And I got paid more to do all Lucha shows.
Yeah, it only cost like $2 to go.
Yeah, and again, for Rising Phoenix, when they came back after that merger or whatever, you know, I only worked one show for them, and it was against
Snuka,
Jimmy Snuka
right?
Jr., yeah,
mm-hmm.
him and his dad, yeah, And that was the only match I worked for. I had a great time during that match. It was a fun match. But, I never really, you know, it's like when I went to Oregon. I would never work for any of the other companies, even though a lot of them would try to book me, as I would just work for Jeff and Pat because I was loyal to them because they would bring me up there. And why would I go work over here?
Right.
When I wanted to only see me here, you know? I never worked for any other company in Florida, like when I was in FCW, and they were, you know, I'd only work for the companies they started, like, you know, Native American Wrestling Federation, or you know, they started ICE, like an International Championship Wrestling for a little while. I would only work for them. I would never go work for Future Wrestling or anything else down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so here you guys are. You have Navajo Warrior telling you not to work for IPW, and then he goes and works for us.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me see. I did work for that WAE when it came out in Arizona, and I, I did do that. But I couldn't turn that down, because here I am working for this company, and here I am getting $400 or $500 paydays from this company in town. So, yeah, I was okay.
I'll never forget that.
We're
going to
make you a whole line of shirts. Here's all your shirts. I was like, you're just going to give me 100 shirts? Sold. You know, that was doomed to fail in its own right.
Of course it was. I'll never forget reading their website, and they're advertising Samoa Joe, spelling his name wrong, on the website, and that was a train wreck.
When they first started talking to me, they're like, we're going to have Stone Cold Steve Austin be our commissioner. I'm like, yeah, you are. Sure you are, buddy. And they're like, we're going to pay you this. I was like, really? Yeah, here's your retainer. I was like, okay, I'll be quiet. I'll be like a real pro wrestler. I'll just go to the show and take my money and go bitch at the bar afterwards.
Hey, but you deserve it for everything that you put up with leading up to that. And that was all at the same time as we were going through with RPW. And like I said, you know, Navajo Warrior ends up working for us and everybody. Did you ever hear what happened with the whole Kazarian flight fiasco with RPW and ICW? Did they ever talk about that?
Oh, no. During all those times, I would just hang out with the bar. I didn't want to fucking deal. I didn't like anybody backstage.
we brought Kazarian into RPW, and he was flown out, and everyone else who came in California had to drive, and TNA flew him. We had to move him from the main event to the second match because his flight was going to leave, and TNA was flying him back home. So somehow Navajo Warrior convinced us to pay to fly Kazarian back for a Tuesday ICW show. And I don't know how he did that. I don't know what he had us.
Nav is a serpent tongue, bro. He's good at fucking getting shit. I don't know how he's done it, man, but he's been able to convince people for the better part of the last fucking 20 years that he really knows how to wrestle, so I don't know.
And I just remember them telling me backstage, oh, we have to do it, and I'm like, why? And no one ever answered the question of why to me, why we had to pay to fly Kazarian to Arizona to work for another company. But that's,
I could totally believe that.
I don't know. So when there's this fake merger or whatever, and the two companies combined, like what did you guys think of us? Because I know like you didn't talk to me for months backstage.
Well, yeah, but let's be honest, Greg. I didn't really talk to anybody unless I was fucking making fun of them.
True.
You know, I was not happy. First of all, there was a lot of shit going on. I wasn't in a good place at the time. I was dating a fucking complete fucking whore bag in Erica, which you know, nobody understands how bad that was. So here I am. By the way, any of you up and coming wrestlers out there, don't ever date a female wrestler. 9 times out of 10, they're just like you are and the rest of the boys. It's gonna go bad no matter how much. So I'm in that. I'm a fucking huge alcoholic at the time, and fucking. You know, I was drinking way too much, so after every show I was at the bar drinking. Fuck, before the show I'd be drinking. I was fucking smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. I wasn't happy. In the only place times I was happy wrestling, really, besides in the ring, was when I was off on the road doing shows everywhere else. You know?
Right.
Everybody backstage was, I'm a huge alcoholic, but everybody backstage at that time is blasting Oxycontins in the bathroom.
I know.
I'll call it out right now. Fucking, you have everybody from fucking Triple X, fucking LT, the fucking
some Lil Nate and them blasting fucking 30 milligram oxy in the back and shit, or 80 milligram oxy before their matches. Fucking, you got egomaniac Jay Garland over here fucking wondering why he doesn't have a fucking heavyweight championship every week. You got fucking, you know, besides Flood and Sheik, fucking Jesse making me laugh all the time, you know, and Ryan Lynch and fucking them. Like, everybody was just, you know, Payne was getting everybody hooked on painkillers and shit and fucking cocaine. I was fucking losing my mind. And here I am, and I'm an ex-drug addict at the time. You know, I still smoked weed and everything at the time, but I mainly was just a huge alcoholic, and I thought everybody was fucking stupid. I was like, none of you guys are real wrestlers. You don't even leave this fucking town. You only work for this fucking company. And these people, you think you fucking are great. Y'all are fucking little minnows in a fucking puddle. And you don't want to fucking be you're fucking giant fish, a shark in a fucking puddle, and you don't want to be minnows in a giant ocean. Fuck y'all. I hated everybody. I was so mad.
I remember.
No offense to you, but I didn't really know you at the time. And to me, everybody that was in back there that I didn't know was just a fucking mark that was backstage. I shouldn't have been backstage in the first place. You know? I was really, like, just jaded to everything down here, you know? I had just been tired of being screwed over. I was fucking tired of everybody. I can't even explain to you how I still get fired up now thinking about it.
It's okay. I didn't like you either. Just because of what people said. A lot of the stuff that said.
No, the thing is also, like, I knew everybody was talking shit about me, yet I was the only wrestler out of that entire locker room, with the exception of maybe Jack Bull or something, that, you know, but he never really went anywhere either. He just went to, like, Japan or WWE. But I was the only one that was actually getting paid and flown out of the state to go wrestle all over the country and shit like that. So it's like, everyone's talking shit to me. Fucking everyone's talking shit. Nobody's actually talking shit to me because I'd have knocked them in the fucking grill. I was fucking getting shit talked about behind my back. And me, I'm not making my shit seem any better, because here I am, a loudmouth asshole. Like, I will fucking tell anybody off. And that wasn't helping me out, because now everyone's going, he really is an asshole. Nobody really, the people that knew that I was just fed up and fired up, you know?
Right.
I was just fucking... So these people are saying I'm a fucking huge asshole, and here I am going off on people, so I'm a huge asshole.
You're just confirming their belief. Because I remember, because I don't know if you were already drinking, and that's why, but after an IZW show, I was over by the bar, and you started talking, and that's when I was like, that was way better than people are saying, because you were complaining about the stuff that I saw and knew was already messed up, and here you are complaining about it. I'm like, this guy gets it, and that's why, you know, I was kind of like, okay, I like Gallo, and you know, he still doesn't like me, but I don't care.
It's not that I didn't like you. It's just I just didn't like anybody at that time. Like, to me, it was all stupid. No. Like, here's all these people doing this and talking all this shit and stabbing each other in the back and blasting all these drugs and thinking they're fucking this great superstar, and not one of them is getting paid maybe more than $20. No one's going anywhere. Here I am fucking busting my ass. I'm working lucha shows. I'm fucking flying out of the country. I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to Japan. They're not even fucking... They'll put over, like, say, fucking John Lyon's trip to All Japan, but here I am going to Japan 3 trips before that, and they're not even fucking giving me a credit on it, you know? And I'm fucking going all over the country, fucking getting paid to work and getting paid to leave, and everyone's talking shit like I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And I didn't know, you know, I'm not saying I did, but I knew more than fucking them.
Right.
Obviously, because they're not getting themselves booked anywhere.
I know. I remember the first time that two guys, Jacob and Marty, they drive to California and they work for EWF, and they get in trouble. And, like, literally the next backstage meeting, everyone's being told, well, get yourself booked. We'll take care of you. And by the way, if you're listening live, if you get cut off, don't worry. This show still keeps recording, and you definitely want to come back and listen to the rest of this, as well as myself and Chad Perry breaking down the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view momentarily. But, you know, the meeting backstage is like, don't go get yourself booked. And I was shocked by that. Like that's what indie wrestling was about, was traveling and getting work and getting experience. And here's this guy that trained all these guys telling them, don't do that. Like, why would you say that to somebody?
Oh, it was the same thing you used to tell us, that don't go to WWE and get yourself, don't try to go backstage, just wait until I call you. And then I met, you know, and I'd always done that for years, and so it knocks, and then we meet Derek Nyker, who is like fucking the Antichrist to Nav, by the way. They used to fucking, Derek's the one that caused all this shit because he made us all grow a set of nuts and realize how to get ourselves booked. And fucking, so then we're showing up, we're going backstage and just showing up and trying to get ourselves booked and looked at, and Nav's flipping out on us, and yet here we are starting to get work with the company, and he's like, you shouldn't be doing that, you're catching heat. And yet I have Terry Taylor coming up to me going, fuck that fat fucking Indian fuck. I'm going to get you to a spot right now. You know, that's how the whole bodybuilding challenge started. And he was so pissed that he had to use NAP in that. That spot with Triple H and Scott Steiner and everything, you know.
Right.
Like, NAP's telling us, don't do that, you know. Every time we'd be doing something, he'd be like, don't do that, it's going to catch us heat. Or he'd be yelling at us saying, weak. Like, I remember one time me and Jack Durango had a, when they were doing the old boutique shows in that little shithole bar, and they had, like, a Mexican TV deal.
Huh?
And they was like, me and Jack fucking Durango tore the roof off the building doing a bull rope match with all of the bars, killing everything. And then I get, he comes in screaming ass saying, you killed our TV deal, we're never getting it again, blah, you fucked everything up. And then in comes the producers and the directors of the TV going, oh, that's great, that was awesome, we're making you guys the entrance of the show. We got to know when you guys are doing that because you guys are money. That's how it was with
so
all
funny.
Of us all the time. And Nat hated us for it.
That is hilarious. It's so funny. And I know a lot of people listening are like, they don't know. But this goes on everywhere. This is not just you know, one state. I mean, these guys are all over the place, and this is what they do. And then, so if you're ever watching wrestling and you see some things that just don't make any sense whatsoever, hopefully this kind of tells you why. Because there's people backstage doing the weirdest things, usually for their own self-interest, that cause these stupid decisions to be made. And that's something that you know, Joe viewer doesn't quite understand, because why would they? You know, why would we?
Anymore nowadays, the whole wrestling scene, it doesn't matter if you're in Europe, because I find it when I go to Europe, I find it, you know, anywhere you go in Japan, you got guys that just shouldn't be wrestling, that are wrestling. You got guys that... Mm-hmm. that aren't trained properly anywhere, that figure once they learn how to bump and learn how to run the ropes, that makes them a trained wrestler. And nobody wants to pay the dues to because people think doing dues is just setting up the ring, and it's not. It's,
right.
it's everything that leads up to that point when you finally get it and you actually understand. And once you finally understand, which sometimes takes 5 years, 10 years, once you finally get it, you realize everything that you just did. And then you got other guys backstage that shouldn't be backstage that you know, made soap operas, and now they're trying to make fucking wrestling videos, you know, wrestling shows, or you know, I've watched my favorite one, I've watched wrestling for 25 years and been a fan, that makes me a fucking expert in it, I'm going to go be a manager and write storylines and start my own company, shut the fuck up, you know, fucking, it takes, and not saying that doesn't work with everybody, because some people are like that, but 99% of them, you don't know what you're doing. You don't understand why we do the things we do and what we do to connect with the crowd. You just think you go out there, oh, this will be awesome, let's do the storyline, and blah, 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 and you hit on this, and blah, blah. Shut the fuck up.
No, I understand. Because trust me, as that person who was backstage and everything, it's like I went in thinking I would know stuff, and then I just learned a lot. And I guess the key is, like, do you learn or do you just continue to assume you know? And somehow, I guess I just figured out that I think my first night in there, I was like, God, I don't know a thing. So I need to figure this out now, or I'm going to look like a fool. And I think,
well,
you know, like,
most people need to be able to do that. See, that was like what I was always able to do. I was always able to, like, if I didn't understand something, take criticism. Mm-hmm. Nobody is able to take criticism anymore to get better. They just go and talk shit about you on the internet. You know?
Yeah.
Instead of just like taking what you say as, you know, saying, like, especially in wrestling, it should be very blunt. Like, it was always blunt with me. Like, you're the shits. You know? Like, you fucked up. Nobody likes hearing that, but I would always take it and try to make myself better. Nobody else does that. You know, I'm sure you did too. You took what you heard and been like, okay, I got to figure out how to make it better, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody else does that, and that's what's one of the reasons why the business is being murdered right now. That and people working for free, flying themselves everywhere, going places, not getting paid. Fucking, why is that? That's not helping the business any. You got fucking guys that are good that should be getting paid, but no, they're not getting booked because you got 4 yard tards that'll fucking drive out there on their own dime and fucking not get paid to fucking fuck up a show, and then those fans see that, and they're like, oh, I don't want to come back to a wrestling show besides WWE. This thing sucked. So promoters aren't making money. Fans aren't coming back. Nobody wants to go, and then when you have the good wrestler on a show, nobody wants to go to it because they saw the yard tarts the last one and go, fuck this, I ain't coming back.
Yep,
it's going
no,
business everywhere. It's like this all across the world.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And the fact that it happens overseas, too, is definitely eye-opening, even for me, because we don't, you know, being in this country, I don't follow overseas wrestling all that much outside of some stuff from Japan. So I want to fast forward, because eventually you get linked up with the company called EXW. What happened? I was at the first EXW show, and I remember the things that I saw. Like, what happened with EXW?
Like how we started it or how it ended?
How it ended is probably a better story.
I don't know. How it started was a pretty good story, too.
Yeah, so what got that started? What did get it started?
Well, you remember when IZW was dying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I had brought Nyker to come back to feud with me. Well, mm-hmm. I was also booking. I got asked to go book for Real Deal Pro Wrestling.
Right.
And now I started booking for them, which caused another huge shitstorm in IZW. You know, because NAV hated that. They all hated that. And I couldn't get anybody to come work for me except for a couple people. Well, I wound up getting screwed over and got the book yanked out from underneath me, and me and all my wrestlers left. But at the same time we were leaving, because Derek was working with me too, Derek had just gotten an offer to go do a casino show. So that's how he started EXW. In fact, it was me, him, and I hate to fucking say his name, so I'm not going to, but a blonde douchebag. Fucking... we all, you know, they had the idea, they had the connections, and then they got me to help get the talent, and we all three started EXW. You know, in fact, Elite Extreme Wrestling, named after me and Derek's tag team, because we were Elite Extremists.
Yep.
And so basically EXW was a giant fuck you to IZW and Real Deal Pro and everybody else. In fact, our first show was one of IZW's last shows. It was at a school.
Right.
And they drew like 15 people, and we drew 900 or 1,000, something like that, at Rawhide. And it was ridiculous. And that wasn't even one of our good shows. You know, you saw some of the other ones. We started getting better and better and better, and we got a really good following. And then for the same reason it started, it came crashing down because, again, you had this blonde douchebag who shouldn't have been in there. Fuck it.
Right.
And we were always trying to cover because he had good connections and trying to, you know, placate his ego, but he was a fucking retard. Sorry to anybody that's mentally handicapped, but he was a fucking retard. And still is. And couldn't wrestle his way out of a wet paper sack if somehow people until people meet him, they think he can. And we had a good deal at Toby Keith's, and he winds up burning them. And it wound up driving Derek away, who was the owner of the company. And he couldn't stand to work with him anymore, so he just walked away. And me, honestly, I've been wanting to quit for a while because I couldn't stand him or the fucking guys that he kept bringing backstage that were trying to write the storylines and shit like that. These fucking guys are running for the business. So I'm fed up with everything. I've been trying to leave for 6 months already, but I couldn't. I didn't want to walk out on Derek because he's my friend.
Right.
Even though him and me would go head-to-head half the time. Because he was obviously trying to defend his company, and I was trying to bury all the guys that were stupid. And we were having great matches at the time, you know, because it was me and Dom. And, well, I had a great feud with the Freak Squad, and then I joined up with him, and it was me and Dom against him and Val Venus. And eventually when he walked, I walked, and Dom walked, and that was it. Like, we just no more. And then the company kept going for a little while, and then they weren't allowed to use the name anymore. So that blonde douchebag went back to, like, FSW, who he had been burying and trying to put out of business the whole time when he was with EXW. He wanted to run in Vegas the whole time and put him out of business, even though that wasn't our market. He went and kissed his ass and got the FSW name, the Future Stars name, and I'm sure that crashed and burned. That's probably why he doesn't have that name now, and now he's fucking sucking Marquez's dick to get the fucking CWF name. But the guy is the biggest fucking jabroni in the fucking business. He doesn't deserve to be in it. He's a fucking jackass, and I hope he's listening to this, because I'll fucking tell it to his face. He's a fucking jackass.
He'll probably hear about it and listen. He came on our show once, and I let him come on and promote something.
He's all fucking pilled out.
And he comes on, and he actually ends up burying Buggy Nova on the program, who's of course a great friend of the show, calling her just another notch in the belt, and which was funny because at the time they'd never even met, and so I pretty much immediately put an end to that and had it out with him privately, and he actually apologized to me, but never publicly, which is fine. I don't need him to. What I never forgot was the one EXW show that I worked, and I did some, you know, I was helping with sound, or I don't even know what I did. I think we were filming it, whatever. The T-shirts get delivered, And he tells the guy, let's go outside and I'll pay you for the T-shirts. And then he shuts the door behind him and goes out to the person at the front door not to let him back in. And
oh, yeah,
and
so that was the Chucky. I heard that story recently, actually, the guy that made all our T-shirts. Yeah, I heard that story recently. Yeah,
he walks him outside.
Like I said, he's a dirty dude. I remember one time we had the first Extreme Measures show at Celebrity Theater, and it was like the main event was like me and Dom and Frenchie against Derek and Val and A-Train, and he winds up bailing out on not paying any of the guys. You know, Derek left with DeMott to take him back to the hotel or to the airport, you know, and Brian gave Dom like gave Derek like $140 to pay like eight guys with. And so me and Dom are sitting there because Derek gives it to us. He goes, he was like so frustrated. He left to take Bill because he had to be at the flight out.
Right.
So me and Dom are going, we can't pay all these guys from out of town $30 each, $20 each. Like, this is bullshit. Like, so we wound up pulling money out of our own accounts and paying for all these guys. Like paying them like what we could in the back room.
Right.
You know? And which obviously this never happened, obviously, you know, because this is going to be talk shit about, I'm sure they're going to say this never happened, but it did happen.
Mm.
And we paid all these guys out of our own pockets, and that's how it constantly was there. He just was out to burn everybody and say, oh, they should be lucky to work for us. No, motherfucker. You should be lucky that they are taking their time to work for you. You know? Like,
yep.
the guy's a fucking doesn't get it. He's a fucking bullshit artist. I fucking hate his fucking guts. And
so
I hope one day that he fucking, I don't even care. He wouldn't be on the dead wrestler list anyways. He's not a real wrestler.
So what changed for you? Because I remember going to a Pure Pro Wrestling show, and I remember sitting there, and you guys were gracious enough to let me come for free, and I remember someone saying, oh, Gallo wants you to come backstage and talk to him, but I'm thinking, what does he want to punch me in the face? Like, why does he want me to come backstage? And you had this huge smile on your face, and you gave me a hug. Like, what changed for you just in general?
Well, I wasn't dealing with douchebags all the time anymore. Like, after I left EXW, and like, Derek had quit, you know, and I didn't have to deal with all the stupid people or the stupid guys that didn't know what they were doing in the business or you know, like IGW shit, and I was just working on the road and I was making money. Like, I started to enjoy wrestling again, you know, and it wasn't like, again, I didn't have any animosity towards anybody. I just didn't like people that didn't like the business or didn't understand the business.
Right.
You know? And guys to me like that, like they just didn't get it. And I don't give a shit, you know what I mean? They're like, you know me, like I said, you heard me now call people out. I don't really care, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I was loving the business again. Here I am, you know, we were working with 01, so we were tied in with Japan. We were doing those Fighting Spirit challenges and sending people over there, you know? It was fun again. Everything was fun again.
Yep. So, no, I definitely... Definitely, and it was fun. I mean, the shows that I went to were a blast. So now, working with Slam U Pro, like, what's the big goal with that promotion?
To make it something different and to have fun. That's the biggest thing. To make the fans – here's the thing, is to make the fans have as much fun as we're having in the ring. That's what was forgotten about in wrestling, I think. Like all the IZW was, it was, let's kiss the fans' ass and give them what they want, or let's do this and that, and let's – you know, try to mark out for ourselves. And that's not what you should be doing. You should be making the fans have as much fun as you are and not letting the fans dictate to you, because no one's going to have fun that way. You give the fans what you want, and they're going to have a blast at it because you're the wrestler. And if you're having fun, they're going to have fun.
Exactly. Which,
you know, and that's the thing, is just to be interactive again and actually have a wrestling company where fans come and know they're going to have a good time, and you have a good time and they have a good time and the drinks are flowing, the party's going, you know. That's what Slam U is all about, partying, having fun, having a good time. Obviously, I don't party anymore. I've been clean and sober for going on a year straight now. But, you know, there's more to life than just drinking. There's still partying and having fun.
Right.
So...
Oh, yeah.
But the fans
can
drink as much as they want with us. You know, we want the loud fans. We want the obnoxious fans. All those ones that have fun and yell and cheer and boo and bring signs and throw toilet paper. We want all that. You know,
yeah.
Have fun.
The fans that a lot of promoters complain about, but yet they're complaining about the paying customer, which just surprises me so many times, because you wouldn't be there without them. So.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is. It's painful. And of course, you know, this Thursday, Slam U Pro does have another event, the fourth in the series of events that they've had so far, at the Arizona Event Center, azeventcenter.com. And, of course, you can find Slam U Pro on Facebook and also on Twitter. And for the first time in, I don't even know how long, you probably do, you and Dom Vitale, the Freak Squad, are teaming up in Arizona, which hasn't happened in probably over a year.
Yeah, it's been over a year. Yeah, we haven't teamed up in Arizona over a year. We team up all over the place. It's not in Arizona.
Not in the state that you live in.
It'll be the first time in well over a year, like a year and a half almost.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you're facing the Almighty Sheik, which our listeners are very familiar with. He's been on the show twice. And Josh Payne. And a lot of people probably aren't familiar with Josh Payne on this show. Tell them a little bit about one of your other opponent in that match, Josh Payne.
Josh Payne's a wrestler out of New Mexico. He works for the Destiny Wrestling organization primarily, but he also goes up and does a lot of stuff for like Primo's Hardcore and some other places in Denver. He's really good. He's part of the team called the Death Rage Cartel. They have some very interesting videos on YouTube. If anybody can go check them out, they're very interesting. They're kind of psychotic, kind of Devil's Rejects-ish. But he's really good. He's a ginger, so he has no soul. So don't expect to see anything soulish in him. He's ugly as sin, you know, obviously because he's a ginger and he's like a jar of mayonnaise. He's kind of like a skinnier Seamus as far as skin goes. But no, he's got a lot of skill. All the guys in the Death Rage Cartel have a lot of skill. They all have their attributes. You know, you have Dexter, who's the short fire plug of them. You have Johnny Kay, who's like the comedian part of it. And then you have Payne, who's like the psychopath, and he can really wrestle. He's really good to go, and he brings it in the ring. So I'm actually looking forward to this. It's going to be a good time, him and the Sheik against me and Dom. I mean, they're going to get their asses kicked, but
of course. Of course they will, because that's what you. And I'm excited to see you guys. I've never seen. Oh no, I take it back. I've seen you and Dom work as a tag team like twice. So, but it's been quite a long time because usually you guys were in singles and or it was Dom and Frenchie or something like that. So,
yeah.
You know. He's talking about being clean and sober for the better part of a year, and obviously Dom has a lot to do with that. Talk a little bit about your relationship with Dom, and he was, of course, a young guy in IZW when you were going through the stuff that you talked about earlier. How did that change into essentially brothers for the two of you?
Well, Dom was trained a long time ago in New York, actually, by a guy named Shockwave the Robot, and when he moved out here, he quit wrestling for a while because of an injury, and he went back to school, and then he came out here, and I met him when I was training a class, and he showed up because he wanted to get back into shape and get into wrestling. So I started re-breaking him back in, and we started actually feuding, me, him, and Frenchie, on the Real Deal shows, the Real Deal Pro Wrestling shows, and then we just transcended. We didn't even mean to. It just, things happened. Like, I wound up kicking Frenchie, and he blocked wrong, and fucking broke his arm, and we wound up transcending the feud into EXW, which people really thought we hated each other. In times I thought we hated each other too. That was a really hot feud, went on for almost a year, and we wrestled a lot there, like I said, and then eventually, you know, we wound up teaming, and Dom's straight edge, in case people didn't know that, Dom's a straight edge wrestler. And he was just always there for me when I was going through all my traumatic shit and getting hammered. He'd make fun of me for it, but he would never turn his back on me. And he'd make sure I got back to my hotel rooms on time, and he'd make sure I was awake. And he put up with me being a complete and fucking utter alcoholic. And eventually when I quit, he just helped me through it. You know, he was just always there for me.
Yeah, and he's been through that himself, as he's talked about on our program, and has a passion for helping people get through those things. So definitely makes sense. It's funny too, because when I was essentially transitioning and becoming somewhat of a manager in IZW, and he was one of them, he was like all about it in promos. He's talking about the DeMarco family and all this other stuff, and it was impressive, because at the time, it's like we're trying to figure out what to do with Nykirk and do we turn them face and all those things? Because I don't know if even you knew, like, a lot of the stuff that was being booked in IZW at that point was stuff that I gave to the guy who was in charge beforehand, and then he was using it. And so it was just interesting for me because he's out there. And Jack Bull knew, because I remember he pulled me aside one time and was like, you know, you need to speak up more and do all these things. And, of course, then he disappeared. So it was interesting. But to see that and then to see you guys now is just amazing for me sometime because it's, you know, things just change so much. And it makes me happy to see you guys so happy when you're out there working and doing the things that you are doing. So, yeah, we're going to have to do another one of these because there's still so much more that I would want to talk about. If people are looking for you, like listening to hearing about you for the first time, what's the best way for people to find you, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, whatever is best for people to find
you? I'm on both. I'm on all of them. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. My Twitter is at GQ Gallo. Still got the old name on that one. And then my Facebook's Gabriel Gallo. Just look for the one because there's a lot of Gabriel Gallos, I guess. Just look for the one that has all the crazy, insane pictures of a guy that looks like he should be an axe murderer.
Looks like a wrestler, and that'll be the right one.
That'll be the right one.
Definitely the way to do it. That's where I found the picture that I used for the promo for this show, which you should turn into a t-shirt. That's a good. I don't even know how that picture came about, but that's a good picture.
That picture was taken at Hood Slam. That was
okay.
Me and Dom did the Hood Slam show in NorCal.
Oh, yeah, I'll find a way to credit Hood Slam for that then, because sometimes we use stuff that don't even know where it came from, and I try to credit things as often as I can. So, stand Thursday for Slam U Pro, and definitely excited about that, and excited. And the undercard's exciting, too. That's the thing. Like, there's a lot of good talent there that you don't fully see around this state or in this area. So I'm excited to see what comes about at that show, because it's always a good time when we head over to the Arizona Event Center. So, should be good. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and we're definitely going to have to do a part two in the future because there's so much stuff that we didn't even really get a chance to touch.
Well, just let me know anytime, Greg. You know I'm always down for it.
Sounds good, brother. I appreciate it, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you Thursday. Have a good night.
There we go. Gabriel Gallo, the king of no rules, guy who's been through a ton and really has come out very well on the other side, which says a lot for him and for his experience in the business and everything. And now, I already talked about it earlier, but you're definitely in for a treat, guy that we haven't had a chance to hang out with and have some fun with in quite a while, but still a part of the family, and that is, of course, Chad Perry.
Let's go!
Chad Perry.
100% reason to remember the name.
Chad, it's like you remembered how to get here, which was the best part.
That is, it is. It's always good, you know, remembering you know how to ride that bicycle.
Exactly. It's like riding a bike. Funny story, like just because of how busy we are. My son went like 2 weeks without riding his bike, and my wife was like, he doesn't think he knows how to ride his bike, and I'm like, tell him it's like riding a bike. I don't know what to tell him at that point. It was just as the example. But we just made him get on a ride, and he was fine. So yeah, it's good to have you back. Of course, you've been kind of immersed in other things besides wrestling for a while, and sports picks up in the fall. And, of course, right now, I mean, you've got, you know, football season. You know, the Patriots did lose today. And, of course, you got the Red Sox in the World Series. So, I mean, you're still going to be a busy guy.
That's right. It's just a one-shot deal for right now. I'm playing a little Rob Van Dam. But, you know, I had the time for tonight, so it's always great to be welcomed back onto the show.
Oh, of course. Because it's funny. That's the second Rob Van Dam one-shot deal reference of this program this week. So it happens on the show. We are going to talk some wrestling. If you're looking for a Chad Perry game, you probably won't get one of those this week. But some things have happened recently that I want to talk about, and maybe we'll get to all of them, and maybe we don't. But the biggest thing this week that I want to talk about with you is of course, the face turn that we saw on SmackDown. Kind of random, but maybe not, given what happened and how his partnership with AJ ended. But Big E Langston randomly turning face on SmackDown. So what do you think of the face turn for Big E?
Yeah, random is definitely a good word for it. I mean, when we think back to the summer when he did side with AJ and was against Dolph, it kind of seemed like, well, maybe that would have been a good time to keep everyone all together and turn them all face, or at least the two gentlemen. But Big E's just kind of been floundering, just like Dolph, so I definitely think it's a good move. I have seen some of his NXT stuff, and like many people will say, he's an entertaining face, and he can definitely get the crowd behind him. And, of course, if you're going to have somebody turn face, do it in a program that involves CM Punk and Paul Heyman, and hopefully he'll just kind of become a small part of that program if it continues past Hell in a Cell at all, which one would presume it goes till Survivor Series. So, yeah, it definitely gives people a reason to be interested in Big E Langston, and it makes me intrigued as to where they're going.
Yeah, and Jay Alito, who, of course, is, you know, from Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, or Powerhouse Pro Wrestling, he has often said, and is reiterating, and now he's a face, that he expects Big E to be the first black WWE champion, of The Rock notwithstanding, in he's black and someone, so I would say The Rock is black. But do you see that type of a future for Big E?
That's a tough one. Are we saying world champion or WWE champion? There's a difference.
WWE, because it's just say first, you know, black world champion, because you've got, I mean, Booker T held that belt. So
right.
WWE.
You know, I mean, Big E's definitely a young guy, and, you know, he's not as physically imposing as he looks when he's in the ring with certain guys. It's hard to explain, but when you see Big E at first, I know for a while I thought he was bigger than he actually was. Big E only topped out about 6 feet, but he is entertaining. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that he could be. I mean, he definitely has a good chance. How many young African-American stars are there currently in WWE or even in developmental to that could really, you know, say they could do it in the next 5 years? Big E's one of the few guys that can say that.
Yeah, he's definitely the most well-positioned. I mean, who knows? They're currently talking about the petition campaign by Xavier Woods, but who knows? you know, and he's like the next guy who's positioned that way. I mean, unless you think, you know, Titus O'Neil or Darren Young's going to turn into something, which, you know, Titus is like 10 years older than Big E. So it's, you know, people don't realize how old Titus is sometimes. But Big E's only 27.
Right.
He's officially listed at 5'11", but 5'11", 290. So, I mean, the guy
right.
is just, he's huge, just not in the typical, stereotypical mold. But I think he's big enough to benefit from the big guy, you know, desire of WWE, so to speak. I think he can make that work, and he's definitely entertaining. I mean, even if you just read some of the things that he does on Twitter, he loves to photobomb people. That's hilarious sometimes, and just the stuff like the situation that they put Caitlyn in. I mean, that was hilarious, and like he played the role perfectly. Like he's got some skills that haven't fully been used, and they didn't, you know, they teased it a little bit with AJ, but didn't fully explore it because they probably just don't know what they want to do. But I think the sky's the limit for Big E at this point, and hopefully the face turn, and maybe he's replacing an injured CM Punk for a little bit, who knows. Hopefully it gives him an opportunity and he can run with it.
Now, let me ask you, of course, if he's being put into this program, as we're seeing right now, the natural transition for him is to take that belt off of Curtis Axel.
Right.
Which, you know, another young, not-so-young African-American, R-Truth, has been feuding with him. Do you see that happening? Do you think that's going to be the program that we're going to kind of see transition to here seamlessly?
Probably. Here's the thing about the Intercontinental Championship. I think it's like throwing spaghetti against the wall and hoping it sticks. Like, I honestly think they're like, who can we try next with the WWE or the Intercontinental Championship? And I think Big E might have a shot to make that thing work. I mean, the last guy to really do something with it was Cody Rhodes. They did a good job with the whole Kofi versus Miz thing, and it was kind of the biggest thing that happened in the WWE main event outside of the first couple episodes. But then it just, you know, again, they didn't commit to it. They gotta get, put it on the guy and then get behind the guy, and that's the thing for Big E. Honestly, over the next 12 months, the best we can hope for with Big E is that in a year from now, we're complaining that he's been de-pushed, because that's what happens with all the guys that they push. Like, we're complaining about it with Ziggler now. hopefully they did something so big with him that we're bitching that they're not using him and they didn't just squander this away. So my hope is that, you know, we're in a position to at least complain about Big E not being used, because I like him. I think he's a great worker. I enjoy what he does. He's got this natural charisma that I think can come out, and hopefully they can do something with him. I kind of feel like he's one of those guys you can almost give anything to, and he's going to at least make something out of it. And that's a skill that a lot of the talent there simply don't have.
That's right. So I think, as you said, he's likable. He's Miz, basically, where I think that, you know, he might not quite be on Miz's level where you can send Miz to anything and get good PR, but it's definitely helpful. And I don't want to sound like I'm stereotyping in any way, but, you know, we know they go after demographics. That's the reason Rey Mysterio is so big in the southern part of the country in Mexico. Having Big E Langston be able to go to schools in Brooklyn or something and talk to them as opposed to the Miz, that's a hell of a difference.
Yeah, if anybody complains about pointing that out, they're just not being realistic. Like, the WWE is a major corporation, and they need to worry about those types of things. Like, you've got to send people that young fans that they're trying to cultivate and grow into adult fans are going to associate with. And you know, we always see the reports, whether or not we choose to believe them, that they do want to push a Latin American star, which they have with Alberto Del Rio, and they do want to push an African American star, which they've kind of done a start-stop thing with Kofi and R-Truth, and maybe they try it with Big E, and maybe it sticks, you know. And if people try, you know, if people right now were thinking leave race out of the equation, you're being unrealistic, because the WWE's not going to leave race out of the equation. So why should we do that if we're trying to evaluate? So it'd just be, we'd be doing you, the listener, a disservice if we did. So hopefully, you know, maybe it's an injury thing. That's why he's getting the try. But good. Good for him, and hopefully he makes the most of it. And I would like to see him take the Intercontinental title off of Curtis Axel, because, let's be honest, Curtis Axel defends that belt so infrequently, he himself had to comment on Twitter about how he doesn't defend the title, and he basically went the route of, well, no one's good enough to challenge me for it, and so whatever. But I think that Big E could definitely do something with it. I wrote, you know, when Battleground was such a poorly put together card, I wrote the best alternative would have been King of the Ring, and what I wrote was to have Big E be the 2013 King of the Ring, and then I actually wrote to turn him face. Now, I'm not claiming credit for this. I know we like to do that on the show sometimes, but I say you turn him face, but I had you turning him face because Triple H starts courting him as the King of the Ring and saying, come over to my side, do my bidding, and Big E eventually is in a position where he has to make a choice and ends up choosing, you know, the face route and something that Triple H doesn't like or something like that. So that's kind of how I talked about the Big E face turn. So I'm not – don't email me saying that I'm taking credit for it, because I'm not. But I saw that in him, and I'm glad that they're going that route. So we'll see. You know, the great thing about the show is we can talk about it in the coming weeks and see if they do anything with Big E or if it's forgotten about after this week. You just never know. Chad, the other thing I want to hear from you, of course, is John Cena's coming back. You know, this long-term injury that's going to keep him out to at least the Royal Rumble, and he's wrestling next weekend. So what do you think of the return of John Cena?
I think it's crazy. Let me just give you guys, like, what I do on Monday nights now. I'm watching Monday Night Football, and I'm trying to follow along on Twitter with football tweets while avoiding Raw spoilers. I'm going to watch Raw the following morning on Hulu. That was one thing I have not been able to avoid, is when the announcement came of John Cena coming back. And it kind of blew my mind. I didn't care about spoilers at that point. I just kind of had to read through more. And I got to say, I was surprised at how it kind of got swept under the rug during the match.
Yeah.
And it's insane. I honestly think it's stupid, because when it happened, I called that he'd be back early. But I said he'd be back early in November to have his comeback in Boston. I don't get him coming back this early. I mean, great for John Cena. I mean, the guy is apparently subhuman. I kind of wonder if he is going to be back fully, if he's going to come back and kind of dabble off again. You know, kind of one of those quick right-in, right-out angles. It's something similar to John Morrison a couple of years ago when he wasn't quite healthy enough to come back.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's claiming he's been cleared by quote-unquote WWE doctors, which worries me a little bit. And I think John Cena is the kind of guy who's not going to stay away until he absolutely has to, until he has some career-ending thing or he finally decides he's had enough. But I think he's back, and I don't think it's a short-term thing. I think he's back for the long haul, and honestly, I think that could be bad news for someone like Daniel Bryan, just because, you know, we'll find out if Daniel Bryan really did get this because of, you know, what happened with John Cena's injury. We'll find out the answer to that soon.
Right. Well, I mean, it's very interesting that, you know, he's going after, you know, essentially, as we call it on this show, the Intercontinental Belt, the World Heavyweight Championship, and not just being thrust back in to the main title picture. And for me, I think it's a nice sign of change. I mean, I basically am counting down days here. Del Rio has 7 days left as world champ. I don't see there's any chance that Cena comes in and doesn't win it. But that match, correct me, that match is not going to be in a cell, correct?
No. No, that match is not going to be Hell in a Cell. That match is going to be oddly positioned in the middle of the card for John Cena. But we can sprinkle in a little bit of Hell in a Cell predictions right now. All three, myself, Patrick O'Dowd, and Steve Cook, all said that John Cena was going to win that match. Are you kind of in the same boat with that prediction then?
You know, I kind of was, and then, you know, I got thinking about how it's not Hell in a Cell and how Survivor Series is in Boston, and it just makes so much more sense for Cena to take a big win in Boston that maybe Del Rio escapes with a DQ or something crummy like that. I am going to go with, you know, just to go against the grain, and I'm going to go and say Del Rio retains, does not win the match.
Right.
But I will say, if Cena was to win, I think the best thing they could do would be to have that match open the card. And the pay-per-view just opens with Cena's music hitting. And the crowd's going to get confused and go kind of ape shit like they did in MSG a few years ago. Before they realize they hate Cena again. I think that'd be a phenomenal way to start out the pay-per-view. And from what I'm looking at for the card, they need some type of boost in the arm. So.
Yep, and I think that I joked on this show that, you know, because the way it was announced, like Vicky Guerrero just kind of randomly announces it during a match, and it was just so weird. We joked on this show that, you know, we speculated that maybe John Cena found out about his return while watching Raw himself. And maybe I'm coming back? Okay. And he's such a company guy that he would do that. I don't know if that's true. But, yeah, it would be smart of them to have it open the show. I kind of, if they weren't so desperate, it would have been great if it were like Alberto Del Rio versus a mystery opponent and everybody was speculating Cena and speculating whoever else. You know, people, imagine the speculation. Hogan would be a speculation. Like, it'd be great. It'd be so much fun on the internet for a couple weeks. And then John Cena comes out, which would have been part of the speculation, but people wouldn't have believed until they saw it, and it would have been a big surprise. Right. But that doesn't sell pay-per-views because unless he comes out like during the pre-show. They have to sell pay-per-views because obviously they're not selling quite so well. In my opinion, I think Cena's win the belt at Hell in a Cell, but it could actually lead to the World Heavyweight Championship finally returning to the main event of a pay-per-view.
True.
Which hasn't happened in
2011
or 2010.
I don't really like it.
I know, because what does it say? Because I think that, you know, Daniel Bryan is going to walk out of Hell in a Cell as the WWE champion. And we'll get your prediction there. Do you think Daniel Bryan finally gets to actually win the belt now?
Yes. Yeah. Do I sound confident?
No, not at all.
No. No, I mean, this feud has been interesting. I'm still very much into the, what are they calling Triple H and Stephanie? What is the name they've been giving them on
the The Authority they've suddenly given them. They're calling them the Authority, I believe.
Yes. I'm still into the Authority versus Daniel Bryan storyline. The Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton storyline, on the other hand, it hasn't all done that much. You know, we had the cliche attacks the Bellas, and it's basically turned the Bellas into faces, which is not enjoyable at all. So It definitely makes a hell of a lot more sense than Randy Orton taking it. You can't extend this any farther as far as, you know, the no champion. I am going to go with Daniel Bryan finally gets the win. I hope that the pop is as big as it was with the LA crowd in at SummerSlam. But at the same time, how was the pop when Bryan was believed to win it at the pay-per-view before they took it out?
Night of Champions, it was weird because I think it didn't get the same celebration that got even announcers and the way they were selling it. Like, you just knew that something was going to happen. And you just immediately everybody on Twitter was like, oh, this is going to get taken back tomorrow. And it did. To the point where some people somehow swindled the pay-per-view refund out of that, which I think is just asinine that a pay-per-view company would refund for booking.
If I could have done that, I would have ordered the pay-per-view.
I mean, come on. I couldn't even get WrestleMania refunded when I didn't get to see the main event a couple of years ago. Like, I got a credit or something like that for part of the show. But it's amazing to me that, you know, the way the crowd reacts. Now, they've got to do something on Raw tomorrow to make me believe that if Daniel Bryan wins, he gets to keep the belt. And that, to me, I don't need Shawn Michaels as a special guest referee. I don't need any of that stuff. What I needed was Triple H to come out and be like, put your money where your mouth is. You, Orton, Hell in a Cell, winner take all. I'm not reversing it because Hell in a Cell, no one knows Hell in a Cell better than Triple H. And maybe he can still do that on Raw. But that, to me, would sell me on the finality of the match. And I would believe a Daniel Bryan victory after that. I also can't see them taking it away from him because they've already done it more than once.
Yeah.
And so if they do it again, then why would I believe it anymore in the future? So,
that's the logical thing to me here. We've had Big Show coming out here with that shit-eating grin for the last few weeks. I mean, the big speculation from what I'm hearing is that Mr. McMahon is basically, you know, tell Big Show do whatever he wants. Daniel Bryan wins the belt. They tease through the whole night that they're going to take it away, and then Vince's music hits, and that's going to light up that feud heading, you know, for the next 4 months heading into Mania, relight the Triple H versus Vince feud. I mean, in logical WWE sense, that's kind of what I'm seeing happening, we're definitely due for the Vince return, and I feel like it's going to be right after pay-per-view. So it's either right after this or right after Survivor Series, which I think is probably 4 weeks after. So.
Yeah, they actually go 4 weeks between pay-per-views again. That'll be nice.
Whoa!
Yeah. I no longer have to do 3 pay-per-view recap shows in 1 month like we're doing in October, which sucks. And I agree with you. I think it is, which it shouldn't, because I think there's money in an actual Daniel Bryan versus Triple H feud where there's not all this other stuff going on, and that can actually be the feud. Like, at one point I said this was going to be your WrestleMania showdown, was going to be Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. I don't think it's going to happen because it's probably going to be Vince and Triple H at this point, which I kind of think is a mistake.
In a singles match?
Probably. I know Vince is old. And
no.
I hope not. I don't want to see it. It just wouldn't surprise me. I hope I'm wrong.
Sorry,
you know,
sorry to cut you off. I have not heard anyone say that, so that's caught me off guard.
No, that's fine. I would want to be wrong, and that's in that case anyway. I would be happy to be wrong. I would want to see it be Triple H versus Daniel Bryan and Daniel Bryan go over, because that's kind of what they've been setting up. Because there's money in the Orton versus Rhodes feud that they kind of set up, because it was Orton that cost Cody the job. I know Triple H put him in that position, but you know, it was kind of Orton that did that. But I know a lot of people think it's going to be Cody and Goldust finally having that match that they really want to have. So who the hell knows? Which does kind of bring me to another question, Chad. Like, what do you do with the Rhodes family long term? You put the tag titles on them, which to me is kind of lightning in a bottle. But it's okay because it's sort of re-elevated for now, the tag team championships. But where do you go with that? Goldust is on at least somewhat of a short term deal, and has really gotten himself into amazing shape and could do some good things. Like, where do you go from here with Cody, with Goldust, with the whole thing?
You're right. It is lighting in a bottle, but it is the absolute best kind. It is, I mean, just, you know, like when Hogan returned in 2002 and then they put the belt on him. I mean, that was I don't know if I call it the best kind, but it definitely, it intrigues you enough.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, if you weren't into that main event on Monday night, then I don't know if you're really a wrestling fan, because that match had everything.
It did.
And, I mean, I've always been a big guy for both of the Rhodes brothers, and just the shape that Goldust is in, like you said, I think he's actually in better shape than Cody. I mean, it's pretty incredible. Maybe. So I think that, you know, you have these guys, I would say that there's going to be a rematch of the pay-per-view. I don't think it's been announced yet. You probably throw the Usos in there, because I believe they're the number one contenders. And right there, you can honestly give the belts back to the Shield, and personally, I wouldn't complain, because Goldust, you know, you can write him off for the next couple weeks, or maybe hold him out till Survivor Series and have the Rhodes brothers and the Usos versus the Shield and somebody else in a Survivor Series match.
Right.
And then from there, you got to push Cody. If Orton,
I think so.
If Daniel Bryan and Orton finish their feud, which they should on Sunday, there should be no more rematch of the Survivor Series. So Daniel Bryan should be feuding with somebody else. Cody should go into the feud with Orton, and that can even mean that Orton is the fourth man on the Shield team at Survivor Series. And
right.
That's how you're kind of getting there, kind of like how they did with Kofi and Orton back in the day, back in 2009.
Yep.
This should turn Cody into a great star. Cody has perhaps benefited more from the Daniel Bryan versus Corporation angle than Daniel Bryan has at this point.
Yeah, he has. Like, when Cody got, quote-unquote, you know, storyline fired, we were on the show, we were like, this could be it for Cody. Like, this could finally be what I know I've been asking for a while, is push Cody. And here we are, potentially pushing Cody. And, yeah, he's never been more over than when he cut that promo leaving the building. And I think the time is right. Cody's still young. I mean, if you're looking for a long-term guy at the top, a lot of these other guys are in their mid-30s or pushing their mid-30s, like Punk. Even Daniel Bryan is like 33, 34.
Yep.
And here you have Cody still in his 20s. You know,
yeah.
His late 20s, but still in his 20s. You could get a long run out of Cody longer than some of these other folks. Wade Barrett, Sheamus, they're all in their 30s. And so Cody is just, you know, he came up that young, so he's a veteran at a young age, and he's a Rhodes, so that helps him as well. I think the time is right. You know, hitch it up to Cody for a while and see what you can do with it, because I think it could really lead to some great stuff.
It's very true. Now, speaking of young men who are on the uprise, I want to get your thoughts on. I want to get your thoughts on what I'm hearing about this Damian Sandow face push possibly happening.
We talked about that earlier. I don't think anyone knows what the hell they're talking about. You know, it was we started a new thing since you've last been on the show, where Patrick, you know, shares 3 internet reports from the week and maybe 4 like he did this week, and it's kind of the bullshit internet report of the week is what he calls it, and that's what he brought up, was a Damian Sandow face turn, solely because he gets a face reaction against Alberto Del Rio, which can be credited as much to Alberto Del Rio as a heel as anything else. I don't know. I think, honestly, the best thing you could do for Damian Sandow, and they won't do it, but the best thing you could do would be to have John Cena go over, and then Sandow cashes in and steals a belt from John Cena. That's heat right there. Now you have to make Cena look weak. Can they do that to John Cena? I don't know if they're willing to, but man, would it work. And that's a way to get Sandow over as brilliant and as conniving and as a big mega heel, which is what he should be. It's not like he's getting a face reaction elsewhere. It was just against Alberto Del Rio.
Right. Yeah,
so
I didn't see the episode of SmackDown. I believe that was 2 weeks ago now.
Yep.
You know, I read the report, though, and it all seemed very odd. And I think, if anything, it was maybe just kind of testing the water to see what they could do with Sandow. But,
right.
I mean, I definitely like your idea of Cena. My only fear would be that the program would continue, which would go to Survivor Series, which would have Cena, you know, squash Sandow probably about 5 moves in 2 minutes. So...
Yeah, or he cashes in and loses to Cena and has an unsuccessful cash-in, which I think would hurt Sandow, given how much he's already lost on the way there.
Exactly.
So even though, and Patrick and I never got to have the argument, but he thinks wins and losses matter far more than I do. But in the case of a guy with the Money in the Bank briefcase, I think it does matter at least a little bit. So that's kind of where I stand with that. But I don't think he's going to turn face. I think that was just a BS internet report and one that people were just kind of latching on to for at least a short term. I think it's speculation turned into news, which happens oh so often.
A lot.
So, the Shield has lost the tag team titles, and they're being put in a lot of precarious positions by Triple H, not doing him any favors at certain points. Do you think there's still a lot left in the Shield as a unit? Do you think they're going to eventually break up? What do you kind of see going on for one of the favorite trios of a lot of fans in the Shield?
Breaking up eventually, absolutely. I mean, we're coming up here. You know, we're at the 11-month mark, coming up on the year anniversary. Mm-hmm. A year anniversary for a young unit like the Shield. Everyone wants to think back to, you know, the Nexus, or hell, even go back to 2000 with the Radicals. And fast forward a year,
right?
And, you know, the Radicals, they're kind of scattered. Terry Saturn didn't mean shit anymore. Dean Malenko, by 2001 was, you know, basically fading out into an agent. You know, Benoit and Eddie were still there. But they've done a phenomenal job keeping them interesting. And, of course, adding in Triple H to Stephanie has done a good job. And I do think, like I said, they're winning back the straps here within the next few weeks. As far as when Ambrose drops off the U.S. belt, I would think that it's about due. The only thing is, I don't really see a challenger. I know Ziggler has been challenging him a little bit on and off. They had a great match on the main event this week, but I think that I know it's been an odds maker question before, and I wish I actually tracked all the results when I come back full time, so I'm going to start doing so we can actually look back and compare. But
right.
I still think that we'll see them through the Rumble, probably through Mania, and probably a type of post-WrestleMania breakup. I'm going to guess by you asking the question, though, that you're going to disagree with me.
No, actually, I'm not. I don't know a breakup is being planned. And I think it could be one of those things in wrestling that is somewhat of a letdown. It may happen quietly to where it's not a huge deal. And it could even upset some people because they want this, like, mega blowout. But it could just be where they kind of grow apart, so to speak. All three are crazy talented. You can compare a lot of them to other people, and that's fine, although it doesn't really help them to do that. But, you know, they're really a unique situation. You know, when they first debuted, it was like, haha, screw you, TNA, with Aces and Eights. Look what we have with the Shield now. And all the big boss man jokes came up and everything else. But I don't know that there's really a breakup in mind for the time being. I could easily see them lasting through WrestleMania 30, if not beyond, because as a unit, I think they're still better than they are individually. And that's, I think, the big key. And they're still a special attraction as a unit. And I think there's a lot that could be done with them as a unit, because not in a long time has there been a group of three wrestlers that you put together that actually seems like a cohesive unit. Some of it's gimmick, but it's also what they've done with that gimmick. And I guess maybe it's also hopeful thinking, I'm not ready to see them be done yet, is part of it too, which could just be my own bias coming into play. I think there's more that can be done with them, and you know, but again, you know, their loss was just kind of thrown out on SmackDown. So, you know, it's you know, it may not be as big of a deal to the WWE as it is to me, but I think there's plenty more you can do with the Shield.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I mean, kudos to WWE. They've lasted a year, and they have done a phenomenal job with the Shield. So no one, when they premiered last year at Survivor Series, no one thought we'd still be talking about them in any type of relevance a year later.
And no one saw it coming. It was never reported. And it was well done, because Michael Cole didn't pretend to not know who they were. He was like, oh, look, we know these guys are in NXT, unlike Aces and Eights, where it was like, oh, it's a big, giant mystery for months and months and months. And then when they get unmasked, most of the fans are like, who's that guy? We don't know. And so with the Shield, it was like they were established. For the longest time, I petitioned that they should add a fourth member just to get somebody else over, because that's how over they were. And they still get a pop. Like, when that music hits and they walk down through the crowd, like, it's still a big deal. And remember, yeah, they were carrying house shows for a long time as the main event act, you know, less than 6 months into their run of the WWE. So they were trusted with a lot. And that says a lot about what the WWE sees in those three, and we'll see what happens. But I don't see any reason to break them up, which means they'll probably break up on Monday. But I just don't see why you do it yet. But maybe you also do it at a point, you know, it's kind of like when they turned CM Punk heel during his WWE Championship run. They did it before people were asking for it. And I think, right, you know, that's something that there's some credit to be given there. If they break up the Shield before we want them to, actually, we can call it good booking, because we didn't see it coming. And that's kind of been the story with the Shield. We didn't see it coming with Stephanie and Triple H and how they related there. We didn't see a lot of things coming with them. So it wouldn't surprise me if more things happened that we just couldn't even have predicted. And it's really the way it should be, because we haven't been able to predict the Shield up to this point. And that's why we like them so much.
That's right. And personally, I would rather see them – they've given me enough satisfaction after almost a year now – that if they were to break up by the end of 2013, I wouldn't be upset about it, because it wouldn't be a case of where I thought that they underachieved because of what WWE gave them. They overachieved, and it's one of those things where you're thankful for it happened. So I'd rather see them break up early than, you know, stay together too long and become a stale unit.
Right, break up on top versus, like you said, as a stale unit, you know. And I don't want some other weird grouping of the Shield. Like, I don't want the core of the Shield. Like, I don't, you know, leave them the Nexus. Don't turn them into the core at any point.
Well,
like, I don't
have the Wyatt family. It's basically the same thing.
So I don't want Seth Rollins to, like, reform. Because that's my big concern, is Seth Rollins. I don't want another Justin Gabriel out of Seth Rollins. Like, and I think that, you know, I know people are like, oh, that wouldn't happen, but I worry about that with Rollins. Like, not that he's not talented enough to carry anything, but would they do that with him? Because Reigns is a beast, and he's what the WWE loves, and Ambrose is just so unique and could be this generation's, you know, Piper-Pillman combination that we haven't had in a heel that we're lacking so much. And then where does Rollins fit in? I don't know. And so I worry about where he could end up if the Shield breaks up, because I don't want to see him kind of lollygag around or relish in the undercard world because of how good he is.
That's right.
So we'll see. And before we run out of time, I don't know if you know this, Chad, but TNA did have a pay-per-view tonight. Deal for them in Bound for Glory. AJ Styles is the new World Heavyweight Champion. You know, storyline-wise, not under contract. It sort of could be setting up the autumn of AJ, as I've been calling it. We'll see. I hope not, because it'd be such a ripoff. But a lot of what they're doing now is a ripoff. I know you're not following TNA very closely, Chad. What would it take? What would TNA need to do to change that?
One thing, if they caught themselves on Hulu, that'd be helpful. I don't have DVR space and time to watch them on Thursday nights, and I don't feel like searching YouTube videos. So the convenience of being able to just pop it on like I do other shows. As far as what they can do product-wise, they are in a Hogan. As long as Hogan stays gone, that's going to intrigue me to go back to the product enough to be here in a couple weeks or a couple months when football's over on Thursdays. They got to keep AJ. You know, it's tough. I can't tell you. I have to really sit down. I could probably write a column about what they would need to do, but to sit here and just list them, there's
right,
so many things. The X Division, I've heard great things. A couple things I've heard great things about. I've heard great things about Chris Sabin. His heel turn, I've heard, has been phenomenal. The new guy that debuted tonight, the former WWE guy,
Ethan Carter,
whatever his name is, I've heard he's been doing great stuff. But I'm hearing they're counteracting that with having him be Dixie's nephew or whatever. So it's shit like that. Like, Dixie needs to get back off the TV. That'll make me more interested.
It's actually, I find Dixie entertaining right now. Like, she's not been as bad as I thought she was going to be, and the Dixie train, and I know people don't like her promo style, but it just sounds like a real person, and she probably is this raging bitch. Like, she's played on TV, and that's probably why it feels so real, because it probably is. But, yeah, I don't think she's going anywhere. She just had a T-shirt released with, you know, now we have this whole, you know, because we're Carters thing that her and Ethan Carter said during Bound for Glory backstage. I just think that's not going anywhere anytime soon. But for me, it's the youth movement. Like, if you continue to push young guys, I don't think the Saban heel turn's going as well as you may have heard, at least not in my opinion. It's more of a selfish Chris Saban. And Velvet is now like Elizabeth, like she's being mistreated by Saban. And so it's going to be, but he's no macho man. I mean, it's no different than when he won the world title that Patrick O'Dowd said would never happen. He was no Austin Aries, and that's why it failed so much. But he did win the X Division Championship, which I was kind of surprised because they seemed to be getting behind Manic. And now we probably won't see Manic for a while. But it's just the way TNA does things. But who knows? Like, you know, Magnus is probably in line for a heel turn now with the way he blew off Sting. And I think Magnus might